Government.
Your microphone, madam.
The Finance and Government Operations Committee meeting to order with roll call. Robert?
Here.
Don?
Here.
Phil?
Present.
Here. Tom?
David here.
And Lisa's present. No minutes. Right. Is there any public comment? Seeing none, we will just move into going over the budget. At this time, I'd like to just start with the assessors due to the fact that he has a previous engagement that he needs to attend. Do you want to start or?
Joe's right up there, and maybe Joe, you want to move to a microphone in case people have questions. But if we refer to our giant package here, as you all may know, that the assessor's office may be taking on, very likely taking on quite a few new townships to assess. They're going to have a lot more work to do, and so Joe's budget takes that into account. So we've given him what he's asked for. And we've also worked with Jennifer to double-check the revenue. A lot of that will get paid for, not all of it. But his request looked totally appropriate to us. And, Joe, if you want to speak about it, more than happy to.
My question would be, so it looks like Godfrey Township and Alton Township may dissolve the township government and then just merge it with city government, which is fine. So what are the ramifications with their, I know they would have, I would guess Alton has a lot of individual properties, and I would guess has a pretty large staff.
Right.
And so if they eliminate township government, the burden of assessing, I guess, goes totally on the county then for all of Alton, or how would that work?
That's still up in the air because they have the option of the city actually contracting with someone other than the county to do that work. It would have to be a certified person through the state of Illinois. So they have indicated that that's a possibility, that they might absorb it within the city and just continue to do it with a contracted person. So that's still a possibility.
Okay.
Godfrey has indicated we're already doing Godfrey. They have an assessor. However, we do all the assessment work for them, and we have done that since 2016. We also picked up Morrow in 2016. There's a couple others that are not even going to, because even if they don't vote to dissolve the township, a lot of these townships, the smaller townships, just don't put it, nobody runs, they don't appoint anyone. So like Alhambra, Hamel, Leaf, New Douglas, Morrow, all of those, basically, there's township government there, but no one run for the office, and the supervisor or the township didn't appoint anyone to the office. So we basically have to do that work.
I mean, I guess my question is, like, is there a mechanism for Alton, for example, to what's the revenue? If they get rid of all their staff, and I'm guessing, I know in Wood River Township they had 5 or 6 people that work in their town in the assessor's office.
Right.
I'm guessing Alton would have to be more than that because they have significantly more properties, I would think.
I think they got 4 or 5 and then some temporaries that come in. Yeah.
And so those people aren't – so, I mean, when they dissolved that, what happened? How is there a revenue source to pay for the assessing that it just goes away?
The city has to come up with some sort of revenue source, be it increasing their tax rate on real property. That would be, you know, the main way I would see them, because you're going to lose the township rate, so they may end up increasing the city rate to absorb the duties of the township.
That's what I was getting at. They're 4 or 5 people are going to go away,
right?
I guess, right?
Well, totally up to them how they do that. That's not anything that has anything to do with me. They can decide. Once they dissolve their township, they can decide whether they're going to absorb that to the city and let the city pay for the assessment work and the people that work in the assessors in their assessor office, or not do the work and contract with the county.
Okay.
And the county gets paid by, we keep track of any work that we do in each township each year. Obviously, like a quad township, we just got done with Godfrey, so we hit every parcel in Godfrey Township, so their bill will be for reviewing every parcel, updating any information on every parcel. And then at the end of the year, somewhere around November, December, we will send the county or the township a bill for that.
Okay. I mean, Doug just said we anticipate you doing significantly more work.
Well,
based on what then? Because you're saying that if
there's right. If you notice in the stuff that I sent you, we've already absorbed a lot of work since three townships since 16, with one of them being Godfrey, where we continue to do all the work in Godfrey. So the employees that I'm asking for are not only if we have to take on Godfrey, if we have to take on Alton completely, I'll be back asking for another employee or two.
Yeah.
So what we're anticipating Alton, but we're also trying to catch up on what we've already had to absorb with Morrow and Godfrey and off the top of my head,
Alhambra.
Well, Alhambra's been there a little while, but
okay.
Like New Douglas, Leaf, Morrow, and Foster were all 2016.
Gotcha. Okay.
When they quit doing the assessment work and we started to absorb that. So,
okay.
Yes, sir.
I would also like to point out that Joe in the Tax Cycle Committee, Mr. McCray, is also looking forward to changing how these quads might work, mm-hmm. which will make his work easier and also potentially save the county money because there'll be more even quads, mm-hmm. which will mean that there would be less need for overtime and things like that.
Right.
It'd be a much easier bite for them to take. I think Mr. Hume, in using the word anticipating, might not have necessarily meant that for sure we will take it on, as Joel was pointing out, but that we felt on the Tax Cycle Committee we had to anticipate it. We had to have a plan for it if it happened. So we planned for the worst and hoped for the best.
Right, and if you look at the information that I sent, that I gave you guys, years ago there was a quarter quad set up so that the county board passed a resolution to divide the county into four equal parts, basically, and they did that by parcel. At that time, township government was thriving, and they all had assessors, and there wasn't any problem. So they divided them by the number of parcels in each township and kind of made it an even quad. Well, now, in the 2021 quad, I'll be doing 10,467 approximately parcels versus what we were going to do in the 2020 quad, which is only 3,831 parcels. So over the years, as those township governments have gone, township assessors have gone away, it's put more work on us, and it just so happens that that is in two of our back-to-back years. So if we could spread that out a little bit, we wouldn't have to necessarily hire more people after this if we can even it out to where I don't have to do so many in a year. Because the way it is now, we start working for 2019 quad. We started that last month. So we got guys in the field. We're going through all the townships, all the parcels that we can get. So if we can even that out a little better, we will have a better chance of getting all that done.
And I have one other question. Alton is the one area that doesn't use the same system that we use, correct?
Yes.
So hopefully they will absorb it and we might not have to pick that up. My curiosity is you want two people, and please tell me what you want three and what each one do.
Okay. We're talking about a field man, which is one of the data collector is what it's called. And that job is basically the guys that go out. I have two full-time data collectors now. We hired two temporary. We just let the last one go about 3 weeks ago to complete this quad. Those are the guys that go out to the field. They visit every property. They make the measurements. If it's a new property, they measure the homes, whatever's there. The second one is evaluation specialist. We had evaluation specialists up until about 3 years ago. That was actually my chief deputy's job. He moved into the chief deputy job, and we haven't had one since then. The money got removed last year when we were doing some budget stuff. That valuation specialist is one that basically reviews values throughout the whole county to try to keep equity going. My chief deputy and I have done some of that work, but we're just not keeping up to the way we need to.
Okay.
So that property that's in Godfrey is going to be assessed the same as it is in New Douglas. Property in Granite City, wherever. So this person would actually review values throughout the county, make recommendations for any kind of narrower scope of changes to keep the equity and the values close to market value.
Okay.
The third person is a GIS programmer analyst. That person is currently working on a couple of projects. That was a person that was formerly in the IT department. We had him come up to do some project for us. He stuck around a while. The administration, Doug, and them came to me and said, you're going to have a little money left over in your budget. Would you mind taking half of his salary? So we did that this year. When we had a meeting the other day, they asked if I would take the whole salary for next year, because the person has been working in my office since
about four months.
At least 4 or 5 months.
We feel like he can do more work for Joe.
Right. One of the projects that he's working on is trying to we have vector sketches of all the houses, buildings, anything within a commercial property in the county. We have sketches of that. There's software out there, and he's working with some vendors. There's software out there that takes GIS information, which is the aerial map that you guys pay to have flown, and takes those sketches that we have of the house. So they'll lay that over that house that we just took a picture of, which when we have updated maps, it's a beautiful thing. It will lay that drawing we have over the top of that picture and say there's been no changes here. So what that will do for us in the future is we'll know better where to send our field guys out. We have a pretty good building permit system, but there are buildings that are being built that we don't, yes, sir, well, we don't have permits for.
I just wanted to comment that when we reviewed these positions in the tax cycle committee, I think we unanimously decided that they seemed very reasonable, and I'm glad that the committee is questioning and looking at it in depth as to why we might need to add positions. Would that be your take on it, Mr. Parkinson?
Yes, we saw this coming quite some time ago, and Phil and I worked together with the rest of the committee to do exactly what Mr. Dauterman said, to change the way that it was done in Madison County so that they actually have to pay the full cost, not just a small portion that they were paying. And that should cover the expenses that we incur from having to take on this extra responsibility when these townships are eliminated. So I think that what he's telling us is 100% accurate, and we've taken the steps to prepare for this to cover this additional cost.
Well, my only then question to follow up with that is, if I don't see GIS on here, so obviously has that department gone away, but that was currently or was in IT or a part of their budget. So are you saying
it's a separate budget? It's in the special revenue funds.
It's in special revenue.
Yeah.
Okay. So are we eliminating GIS, or is GIS paying for this, or obviously?
No, GIS will be down to, it's on a separate line. John, where are you at?
Three people.
Yeah, we're just trying to match the personnel to the actual work in GIS. And Joe has a much bigger need for these folks who are union folks that are highly trained. And so we found that in the assessor's office, this particular person could get a lot more work done that would be beneficial to the county.
But isn't GIS its own taxing? It's a special...
Yes, it's a special revenue, yes.
It's a special revenue.
But they have a significant GIS presence in the assessor's office. It's kind of at some point been there's two different departments doing GIS.
I'm wondering if Madam Chairman's question is, then would Joe's department be reimbursed through the GIS fees? Because there's a number of documents that we charge for. It's a fee as a tax, as we discussed earlier today. So we're taxing for certain GIS documents. So would he get monies or revenues from the GIS fund to pay for a guy who does GIS work? I think that's a valid question.
No, it's an absolutely valid question, but I believe that the GIS fees, as they currently are, would not cover the full cost of the GIS use in the county. The assessor has GIS folks in his office, and the GIS department has a few folks, and they also do the major purchases, the software. They paid for the new photograph that we have, and the printers and so forth, and the licensing. And then in his department, he has a separate GIS function as well.
And still his budget's down over $48,000?
No, no. His budget total increase would be $108,000. That's a 7.6% increase. But given the work that the assessor's doing and will likely do, we feel like it's definitely needed.
Why am I not seeing it on the sheets? 7% increase, got it. Okay. Okay. That's a hefty increase. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I don't know if I agree. All right.
It's the only big increase.
Okay, moving on. Next.
Whoever you want to talk to. We have the sheriff here. We have the circuit. Anybody have to leave?
Does anyone need having a... Judge Hella, do you have any part? You want to give us your take on any questions on your budget or...
Want to get the sheriff going? Get you guys on.
6 o'clock. Okay.
Maybe there's the sheriff's department.
Okay, we can move
there's
on.
There's four of them, so.
Real quick.
Oh.
Could I maybe suggest? Can you give us like an overview of what is proposed?
Yeah.
Like, where are we strong?
Sure, we can do
where
that.
Where could there be a problem?
Maybe, yeah,
you know
and
what I mean. Like, give us a little.
Absolutely, if that's what. Absolutely. So, I would say last year we dealt with some cuts and we balanced the budget. We made some tough cuts. This year we're looking at, the economy is generally pretty good. We have income tax and sales tax that looks to be pretty strong. Plus EAV throughout the county is projected to go up, 1.9% or basically 2%. So there's less, I would say there's less pressure on the revenue side for the county. That's not to say everything's perfect. As far as court fees go, the last few years we've seen a decline in fees being derived from the court. And we also have another wrench thrown to that mix with the state deciding to redo court fees throughout the whole state. So that's a big unknown, I think. I don't think we have a good estimate as far as what that's going to mean for Madison County. And I think the court, the circuit clerk, and the auditor are looking at that. There's some implications with the CAC. A little less than half of their year at this point is kind of unfunded. They may be relying on the general fund, which if you've kept up with this fee change at the state, a lot of these fees, that money will be going into the general fund. So there's a likelihood it'll be an increase of revenue for Madison County, but also there'll be more hands out to take from that general fund. So we'll just have to see how that works out. Other than fees, court security fee was also an issue coming into this year. But again, with all the fees changing, we're going to have to look at a new dynamic here. So there's some good news. Revenues look pretty decent. We also asked all the departments to give us a very tight budget, and I think basically every department came back with a very tight budget, and I think they listened. Jennings said, go, Phil.
I had, along Mr. Michael's request, for example, I'm glad there's been discussion between the administration and the department heads or the cost center managers about budgets. However, we have the unenviable task of the final determination as to who gets what. And I'm not willing to abdicate that based upon somebody else's discussion, or I feel that would be unethical of me because I wouldn't be doing due diligence. So it would be most helpful for me to hear if, one, from the administration viewpoint, that the total amount that they want to spend, is it equal, basically equal to the amount of receipts? Is it less amount of receipts, or is it over the amounts of receipt? Because I am not a deficit spender. And also, as each of our people tell us about the budget, I would find it most helpful for them to tell me, is this an increase over the amount that you spent last year? And if so, why? And to ask that question doesn't mean it's unnecessary. It just means I need to understand it as a member of this committee.
Yeah, sure. And getting a starting point for the budget, we've had discussions with Lisa and getting her input with ideas that I think are very good about not potentially, you know, doing away with the reappropriations, how they've been done in the past, and also going for a tight budget. So that's where our starting point came from. We definitely talked to the finance chair here. As far as year to year, is this more money? It is more money than last year, yes, but revenue is also up. We do have, you know, payroll increases and other costs that go into operating an economy of this size. It is, as far as it's balanced, yes, I think it's not totally done yet. I think there's still some uncertainties in a few little small areas that need to be addressed, and we need to triple check a few areas, particularly benefits. Do I think that's going to be very significant as far as changing the budget? No, I do not. Jennifer gave us a revenue update today. It's not only balanced, there's probably more money on the table that could be budgeted potentially or, you know, done with as you'd like. But we wanted to get a little solid ground here with what we had on the first rendition before we entered in that issue of more money.
If I understand correctly, you're not prepared to say at this point in time exactly if it's balanced or not.
Oh, it's certainly balanced. It's probably on the surplus side right now.
Thank you.
But as you know, revenue projections are estimates. We're going to do the best job working with the auditor's office to stay within their estimate. But right now, I think we're going to have a decision of potentially putting money back in departments, and that would be a good thing. We also do have a few issues that we're going to have to discuss and take care of. The CAC was one. Right now, they're unfunded for less than half of the year next year, and so they'll need some help from the general fund, or we're going to have to come to some resolution. I think there's a negative fund balance in the museum, and we're working right now with animal control to tighten that up. And the alternative court has a negative fund balance. So I would be very specific. The alternative court and the museum have a negative fund balance and have a little issue that I think the finance committee needs to take care of and probably talk about. And then we're probably going to need to help the CAC if we want to continue their role into 2019 fully, while we get some clarity on how these court fees are going to impact our revenue line. Because I think correctly, the auditor's office has a very strict line that they haven't estimated that yet.
If I may, the reason I did question is because I do realize the economy is doing better, which should mean that receipts go up. Because when you have higher taxes, everybody's happier. All the more reason for me as a member of the Finance Committee to make sure that money is spent wisely. I'm not saying it's not. Right. But I need to be able to report to my constituents, the people who voted for me, that I have reasonable assurance that we are not wasting money and we're spending it on the appropriate things.
And that, to add the last thing, I think the Sheriff's Department's done a good job of, this year we're trying to get closer to a more accurate budget on what they actually do and a little more detail. And sometimes getting the details down does mean you know, we have to address real issues, whether it's their comp time issues and so forth, which, you know, the numbers are the numbers, and it's no fault of theirs. It's just what we have to pay.
Would you want to give an overview of maybe We know in the assessor's office there's an increase in positions. What other departments have increased in positions?
Since this whole budget is pretty immense, and I generally think I can contain it, most of it in my head. But and I don't want to ever give you inaccuracies, but I do believe we have in this budget, as far as new personnel in the facilities department, we have two janitorial porters, two full-time porters, union porters, which would be, for both of them, I think it's $83,300. And Rob Schmidt can speak to their role. We feel like there's needed. They're very needed. And we also have a Craftsman 3 in the facilities department that would be, I guess their job would be allocated toward the jail and the detention home. Yeah, and Rob can also speak to that as well. John, are you aware of any other new employees?
Those are the only ones I know of off the top of my head. Is those
court security. We feel like we put in the budget a court security officer that we felt like would be here at the administration building and or address other needs that the sheriff would think that they needed to be addressed. That was due to discussions through the Sheriff's Department administration and others about security needs and so forth and their needs. They're also addressing issues like upgrading their X-ray machines and so forth as well.
I have a question on that. The talks about a security officer over here in the admin building, where is that budgeted? Where is that money coming from?
It would be in the court security budget and where that money would be coming from. Or the way we've done it in the past due to state law is that there's a court security fee of $15. And we were looking at maybe adjusting that because of a little – it was not paying the whole freight. It could be as much as $25. I was having discussions with the Chief Judge Hilla when the state decided to redo court fees for the whole state. So it looks like the court fees are going to be all going into the general fund. So to answer your question where it will be paid from, it will be paid from the general fund.
Okay, because I saw in the sheriff's administration that there was just a $80,000 bottom line cut with from there, and I was wondering if that was where you were going to pull that money from or what that cut is or what it was for.
No, that was to get the budget balance to the revenue number we got from the auditor's office. And as I said earlier, Jennifer's given us a different budget estimate that has more revenue. So, again, we're going to be looking at the potential, if the committee desires it, to put money back.
So you're saying that $80,000 may well be restored because of the different estimates of money we'll be taking in?
Well, certainly there's going to need to be a choice there with needs, and it could very well be that, yeah. And I think the committee will have a lot to say in that matter.
And where are the cuts coming from? What budgets were cut? And have they elected?
You got that up there on the...
I have it up here. Everybody's been spoken to the admin. We cut $35,000. I read it better here.
And remember, this is from their submitted budget. So... And I know our department heads and elected officials do a great job, and they definitely gave us their best effort there. But then we need to take that all and work it into a revenue number. So there you go.
Okay. I have a question right there on that screen, number 31. Reduced holiday worked overtime, $43,990.
No, that wasn't a cut. That was because we're doing the new we are budgeting for vacation.
You want to speak in the microphone, John? You might need to turn it on. You get used to that.
How do you turn it? Is it on? Okay. That wasn't a cut as much as it was a correction. It's since we're doing the budget, we're breaking out and budgeting for vacation now, and the sheriff's department and the jail present with a number of people, the amount of labor and the way their contract reads, it presented a unique challenge on trying to budget that correctly. So me and Craig had worked on the original formulas to help break that out, and after their original submittal, we adjusted those formulas after talking to the sheriff and the major and the captain. They gave us some newer breakouts on the percentage of people worked and not working on holidays for each individual budget. And that helped some of those lines up there, the ones I don't have highlighted yellow, like the $118,000 on line 25 is just a correction to the original formula. It was basically double counting some of the items.
Then let's go to line 27 there. Salaries and overtime, another $80,000.
That was the one I thought they were just talking about.
Yeah. I don't know how that's going to work. I'm in that field, obviously you know that. And you can cut it from the budget, but you're still going to pay it. And then you're going to try to say at the end that they didn't make budget, but that's not going to work.
Mike, I think you, in that, I think you might have missed what John's trying to say. We're trying to put a number to it. They actually do, which I don't. It hasn't been done before accurately, because as you know, they work holidays. You know, a lot of them, mm-hmm. And that's the way we were doing regular pay in the past wasn't taking into account all that. So it's putting together that model. So the number that he's cutting from is
out, Doug. Yeah. I get what you're trying to do, but in this scenario, it doesn't work, and here's why. Because law enforcement has to work the holidays. They have to be out there. They have to have a minimum amount of staffing to be safe. You have guys that will take vacation on holidays. You have guys that won't. You have guys that will decide to take comp time that won't work into those figures. But at the end, you may have to pay them that comp time. So if you try to cut those numbers, you're going to be short no matter what.
Yeah, I was just trying to tell you that he was cutting his own estimate that he made. You know, so they're trying to get a handle on it. And that was my point.
Can I ask, Eric, did you do your budget?
Yes.
Is this accurate? I mean, what do you think with this?
It's accurate in part. For clarification, the issue that we ran across initially with regard to the holiday worked overtime and our overtime line was that the new HRIS system and how it divvied up that holiday worked overtime, it was in its entirety being billed out of the overtime line of your sheet up there at the 7110 line. What we attempted to do was segregate that out so that 8 hours or 12 hours of the original pay for that person would go to the regular line, and the overtime at time and a half on top of that for a total of double time and a half would then be separated into the holiday worked lines as opposed to being it all dumped into the overtime portion. So what we did with Craig is try to go through and itemize what exactly was coming and currently being paid out of that overtime line, because it was essentially a mix of regular pay, overtime pay, so if a guy makes a late arrest, he works an hour or two over, he gets paid for that, and also just the fact that they show up to work on a holiday, their entire salary for that day was being paid out of the overtime line. So in that attempt, there were several versions and revisions of exactly which employees we're potentially going to be working on any given holiday. And where we're at right now for the holiday work line, I'm comfortable with that 238,074 number in total for the holiday worked line, which is line 23 up there. Now, the concern that we have is that the bottom line $80,000 cut doesn't appear to be associated with any particular line, and it's an overall cut. And that's strictly from salaries. And with all the hours we put into dissecting each of the salaried items based on per individual, and we come up with a number, we can't necessarily just cut $80,000 because we don't like the end number, because it's going to affect the personnel that we have on staff.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
I would like to thank the Sheriff's Office for breaking it out, because last year one of my concerns with the budget is there was so much rolled into regular pay, you couldn't really figure out what was really going on, and they've really broken it out this year. And when we broke it out last year, we could easily determine that they needed extra positions. So this is most helpful. I guess what I'm hearing Captain Decker say, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that $80,000 kind of a mystery number in the sense of, given your breakouts, how could you come out with that number, or is that accurate?
That's accurate. I mean, I can see you know, when you look at the top line, you see the reduction of $40,000 from our overtime request, which, by the way, we tried to initially attempt to adjust from the current budget of $175,000. Our request was down to $120,000 because we were moving that holiday overtime work into a separate identifiable line.
Yes.
So that $40,000 is identified to something.
So when I you're guess talking is about, the $80,000 realistic?
Well, it's a question mark because you don't know what is it associated with. Because if we're telling you
that's what I meant by mystery for me is if you don't know what it's associated with, I guess my question is, how do you know that that's valid, or is it kind of a educated guesstimate? Or
well, I would be reluctant to relate it that way. I would relate it this way: is that $80,000? Let's just assume that $80,000 is going to come from overtime. Now, is it realistic in terms of when we're doing our budget preparations that we have our current number of employees that work a 365-day schedule? Is it realistic for them or for us to say that no one in that entire division will ever work any overtime associated with their duties? That includes investigations. That includes our patrol division. And our answer to that is no, not with the existing number of employees, because they're going to get paid minus the $80,000 in overtime. They're going to get paid the rest just for showing up to work every day. No extra, no overtime, no anything. So for us, and have that $80,000 additionally cut, that doesn't seem like it makes mathematical sense.
So some of the good news is, again, we put a lot of pressure on Jennifer to give us a revenue, generate revenue real early. And so she's come back to us with, you know, a more generous number, which I appreciate. And, you know, end of the day, we want to do what the board wants us to do and make it match. But also, you go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things we talk about and we've heard in early parts of this discussion have been the revenue projections and it being a little bit early to lock in totally where we're going to end up at, I think, is what I'm getting from the discussion. From the sheriff's office side, we'll be more than happy to explain any of the positions in the cuts that we have in front of you and delay. Really, I don't know if there's a need to make a decision at this point in this meeting. No. But
if you can just get it writing to me what you really would like back, I'd appreciate that. You know,
yeah, and we can provide that. And again, that's part of our explanation behind some of the budgets that we have.
If I may, I appreciate that approach and that there's cooperation here. But as member of finance, what I'm looking for, and I asked if it's realistic, now I think what we're hearing is maybe not so realistic. It's a good first stab at it, but maybe it needs to be gone back at, because I like to know what the real costs are. And I think it's only fair to give a department that has real costs a sufficient budget to take care of those costs. I mean, that doesn't mean there's frills. It just means you get your basic combat load of stuff so you can complete your mission.
Well, and Phil, to second that, as Doug said a while ago, that the sheriff's office has been doing a good job with things such as comp time. It's no fault of theirs. It's just what we have to pay. This is the same thing. These are things that we just have to pay. There's nothing we can do about it. It's payroll.
I have a question. Yes. Regarding that, either Doug or John, so I can explain how you did this. So you're saying that the sheriff's budget went up salaries $270,000, but roughly $144,000 were raises. So $126,000 is an increase, not raises. But then you have $121,000 in buybacks. What's a buyback?
John, you want to, or Captain Decker? Listen, we can involve Captain Decker here because John has worked really close with him. I mean, we're going to be covering the same issue, but maybe Captain Decker can speak to it.
The issue of buyback, there's two lines there that you need to probably pay attention to. One is the comp time buyback, and one is the sick time buyback in line 25. Now, the comp time buyback was developed in association with the out of discussions from finance and the county board regarding the accumulated balances of comp time being carried over and banked, so to speak, enrolled, and then upon severance, the employee was owed a substantial amount of money at the current rate, not at the earned rate associated with that comp time earnings. So in the contract with the collective bargaining agreement with the PBPA, the cap restrictions, which were at 480 hours, which is the federal cap, was negotiated in to be bought down gradually in the first year down to 400, in the second year 300, and the last year 240, so that the long-term obligations weren't as heavy moving forward. With that being said, there was some money associated with the buyback of that comp time at the end of each year that was included for the number of employees that had were approaching or at above the 300 threshold for what would be next year. In the sick time buyback, what is in the contract is they are allowed to accumulate, off the top of my head, 180 sick days on their books over time. So you're looking at an employee that's been here probably at least 12 years before that happens. And any overage at the end of the year that is in excess of 180 days is bought back from the employee at a rate of one half. So if it's 20 hours over that they haven't spent and they're in excess of 180 days, then they're bought and paid for at a half a rate.
We're basically trying to implement the matching principle, which is, when this is earned, we're trying to get it paid.
And by buyback, are we saying we're paying out? Is that what this is?
Mm-hmm. You have to.
Yeah. Well,
that would just
instead
be
of,
easier if we just say we're paying the money rather than there's one in the buyback.
Well,
no, I understand.
We're trying to get a place in the county, and it's going to be a little bit slow process, but we're going to get there. And it's just like with the excess vacation balances. It's trying to get the cost and the period of where it's earned and get it paid so that it doesn't linger on going forward and get more expensive.
Yeah, if that's a debt that's on the county.
Right.
All those numbers are out there, and the quicker we pay those things off and reduce those numbers, the less debt we hold.
The key is actually we're going to have to actually pay it.
So eventually, will that 5-10 years from now, that will be a lot less? Is that the goal? Is that true or no?
Well, not necessarily.
No.
And again, I say not necessarily because law enforcement's unpredictable in terms of the types of calls and the amount of overtime that each employee works. The sick buyback is basically a reward for employees who don't ever use their sick time. And it takes a long time to achieve the 180-day maximum. So if employees are using that, whether it's justified for surgeries or whatever else, that time's available for them, then they're never subject to the buy down, so to speak, to the maximum cap.
I think where you're going to see the savings is whenever people retire.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That amount, the liability on their comp time, sick leave, and everything, especially your comp time, will be
because that cost is floating out there.
Right.
It's just not on the paper.
Yeah,
and we're trying to get it on the paper.
The real issue is when a non-ranking person is accumulating, because they're working the street, they're working probably more overtime and have more overtime opportunity than other jobs are associated with this office. And if they're accumulating that at a rank of deputy sheriff, and that is just allowed to be on the books for 10, 15, 20 years, that person is gaining the annual cost of living increases. Plus, if they attain any future rank, they are paid out at that future rank rate. So in the long run, it is a big benefit to the county in order to reduce that long-term liability and pay it at the rate of the earnings.
And we're trying to implement this and get everybody else paid at the same time in every other department. So,
instead of buyback, maybe payback.
Payback.
That would make more sense.
That sounds better, actually. There we go. Payback.
Well, the thing I like about this, too, and correct me if I'm wrong, Captain Decker, there seems to be additional savings for those people decide to put some of what they've earned into their health care This is additional savings for the county, is it not?
Yes. The line for the comp time buyback and that program has been expanded, and it is being offered as a post-employment health plan incentive at the end of the year for any excess above the threshold. They can roll that tax deferred into a post-employment health plan to cover retirement health care premiums that are applicable for payment on that expense. It also, because it's tax deferred in that way, it reduces the amount of obligation associated with the buyback, because you're not required to pay the employee pension or employer pension contribution, or I think FICA and Medicare also on that.
So what impresses me here, if I may, Madam Chairman, is that they've worked well with the union, and they're saving the government money in the long run, and they are helping the employees' health care, which is obviously a major issue. I think they're to be commended for this part of their budgeting and working with the administration to do this.
Well, nothing's right. My only other question is for your salaries converted to medical service contract. What is that?
That was previously isolated for the payment to Dr. Blankenship, who was our longtime jail physician. He passed away, and his the medical services were then contracted out to a medical service provider. We did not hire or pay any individual like we had staffed, so to speak, Dr. Blankenship. So it was gone through a provider service as opposed to an individual. So the cost of that was moved from the salaries line, because we would no longer be employing a physician, so to speak, and it would be included and moved to the services line of that portion of the budget.
Is there any change or increase in that service then for medical coverage?
Right now we are in negotiations to get a number finalized for the cost. It's going to be more than the cost of Dr. Blankenship's service. You know, quite frankly, in the past he probably underbilled for the services he provided to the county and to the detention home. He was the physician for the detention home for numerous years as well, and we've seen that number go up, but it's going to be within our budget proposal from what we're in or what we're seeing right now.
So it will stay within the framework.
Yes.
Okay.
And that service is currently being contracted out, so it's we're looking to provide and shop for a cheaper or more viable solution long term.
Okay.
I had a couple more, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Having followed the jail project pretty closely, I also saw a $10,000 cut in the or $5,000 from linens and uniforms and laundry, and $5,000 from cleaning supplies. I don't know what value that has in cutting it, being that I can see a lot of messes coming with this project, and I mean, I don't know what the purpose of that is. And I also saw in jail groceries, that's a $50,000 cut. I don't understand that.
When we got into it, do you want me to answer that one, Mike, for you? I think, because we listen, when we're looking for money to balance the budget, we're certainly trying to be hawks, and you know, I guess we're anticipating 30 prisoners plus to be in a different jail eating somewhere else. We'll be paying for that out of capital projects, so we're hoping not to spend it here.
That doesn't help you at all, because that $10,000 is funded 100% from commissary funds and a special revenue fund, and it already brings in more revenue than there is for expenditures, so you're not doing yourself any good.
On the commissary line, we could take note of that, but the groceries line in particular.
I mean, I don't know why it's a cut. They're already doing less. They're bringing in more than they're spending, and it comes from a special revenue fund, so it doesn't make sense to cut.
We can note that, John.
The jail groceries. I mean, we're gonna. I understand that we're going to, and it does seem like a good place to try to look for a cut. I'll give you that, because we're looking at what we're going to do with all these prisoners during this project. However, they still have to come into the jail, and they still have to be booked in here. They still have to be processed here. And whether they go to a different facility, we don't know yet. But even if they do, it's not going to be an immediate transport. They're still going to have to be in our facility. Whether it's a day, maybe 2 days before they get the transport or arrangements made with another facility, we still have to feed those same people. We're already working down, we're trying to get down to, 275, somewhere in that range. And we're operating around the 300 level daily. I don't know if you guys get those too, but
it's getting better.
It's getting better. And it's frustrating for people out on the street that are working these cases because you know that you're locking them up. The next day they're back out, a lot of them, right? But it's understandable, and hopefully word's getting out of why this is happening, and it's a temporary thing. But these people are going to have to stay in there for a time anyway. If that has to be cut, that is something to look at. But just be aware that if we do cut that, we may have to still pay it.
Mm. But still, we should be down.
Maybe not.
We have to be.
Well, but
there's not an if and buts about it. They can come in, but they got to go out.
They have to come out. But there's no guarantee that we get them out that same day.
I understand, but then we're also paying $65 a day to have them transported. So somewhere it's got to be a difference.
Yeah. But what is the average day for a prison? Is there an average?
I don't know that you can.
Nope.
I'm sure we can generate an average, but every year is an average. Like this year, the last two homicides, we have 8 suspects in custody on 2 homicides.
Yeah.
So your average is no longer an average. It's a new norm where those people are going to be here for more than your normal stay. Whatever the average is, that is going to skew the average for the...
No.
All we can do is take a total stay and divide it by 365 and give you a number, but there's no average that is consistent because of the type of crimes. And so you have these 2 homicides with 8 suspects. That changes everything.
Trying to figure out
I just don't know how you can figure that. There's no way to do it.
We no longer house long-term any misdemeanors, traffic tickets. That used to be a common thing. We don't do that anymore.
They're well earned.
They're felonies, or we're holding them for another agency until they apply for a felony.
That's my point. The thing is,
it's terrible. Yeah.
$60,000,
kind of mute in the big scheme.
From the sheriff's office side, I mean, our only concern with that is that you're making, an informed decision on cutting that, and certainly if, in your evaluation, that is within what is reasonable, then so be it. But when it comes to those groceries, medical, and utilities, those are things we really have no control over whatsoever. And if there is a delay in, I think what now is maybe February, is that the latest on when we're going to relocate prisoners?
I think February or March.
So there's a certain, first quarter of the year that the relocation is not going to kick in. So it's not going to be a, 100% solution for the number of prisoners you're going to reduce, which is going to be like 30, 32 people. So it's something to consider. And certainly if you decide to cut that and keep it where it's at, we'll attempt to live within that budget. But it is beyond our control.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You did raise the issue of when we're transporting, the issue that we're going to have to transport inmates to Macoupin was raised at $65 a day. I haven't looked at all the hieroglyphics here. Is there adequate money set aside here to pay for that cost in this budget, in your opinion? And I haven't even found it on here yet.
That is going to be, I think, it's going to be separated into its own jail renovation cost budget that is going to be, I think you moved it to the capital projects fund. So I think that's where
Phil, we have the capital projects fund funding that, and then we also have, frankly, court security has a new van. And one of the reasons is because, well, we have two older vans, and the likelihood is we're going to be transporting prisoners everywhere.
My question was based upon a conversation that I did have with Captain Decker, and he had a figure in mind that it would cost probably to take those people. And last conversation I had with the sheriff's office, it sounded as if McCoupin was going to take them and they were going to do the transporting. So if that is in fact true, that seems like a pretty sweetheart deal for us, because then we would not have to worry about depreciation. We would not have to worry about the cost of staffing or the dangers of roads or the danger of escapes that comes with transporting. There would be a lot of benefits to streamlining, having the cost of transport and housing given to one organization that guaranteed it. And so I was wondering where we were at in the process of that.
We're still waiting from, I think, the city of Alton for their final number. But it's going to be, you know, plus or minus $5 from the McCoupin County proposal. So we budgeted, I think, probably $60 a day per prisoner for the 32 people that would have to be relocated out of a cell block. For the remainder of probably three quarters of the year, based on the relocation occurring in February. So that was all prorated into that figure and included into that capital project fund budget.
Now, the reason I responded the way that I did was they could be going anywhere. You know, my understanding was is pretty previously, and things change, they could be more cost effective or there's a better deal someplace else. My understanding was you're going to use one primary provider for this and make it easy for everybody.
Yes. Ideally, that's the solution we're trying to look at. And additionally, those 30 prisoners that may be relocated are going to be prisoners that do not have upcoming trial dates or pending appearance dates. So we're looking at long-term stability for the facility that we're going to house them to, so that we don't run into a logistical nightmare housing, you know, having people come back and forth. The advantage to going with someone in like an Alton PD was their ability to be on our network and do video arraignment if necessary without having to do any transportation. McCoupin County would be outside of that network, so we would have to logistically get them to our facility.
Well, so, I understand that things change. And
yeah.
I'm just worried about cost effectiveness and the safety of our own staff. And
absolutely.
The logistical concerns. And
yes.
You're raising a technical logistical concern that I hadn't previously thought about.
And quite frankly, those facilities aren't going to be expected to house our most or worst behaved prisoners or the prisoners that medically have the greatest needs. They're going to want stable prisoners that they can feed and maintain at minimal inconvenience to their operations as well. And, really, we don't want to have to constantly shuffle prisoners based on the behavior issues that they're experiencing in a different facility.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any other questions for the sheriff at this point in time? Moving.
Just on the admin? Or well, I guess that, so I just went through and quickly did, you know, the largest increases. So that was sheriff admin. Jail admin's increase cost was $308,000, right? And of the salary amount, that was $286,152 being raises. So you're looking at $134,000 being raises. So $152,000 increase in your jail admin that's not related to raises. So then what is that extra personnel?
No, there's no additional personnel from last or this current year to the 2019 budget. What is changing, and you're probably seeing that in the salary lines, is by sitting down with Doug and John and Craig, the issue of the comp time buyback. And the fact that we are having to now budget, or what we have done, is budget each hour for all of those employees. because the buyback reduces the incentive for the employee to bank that overtime as comp time. So we have to be prepared to pay that this fiscal year. In years past, we've kind of kicked the can down the road, and let's just say on a given holiday, 30%, and I'm making this number up, 30% would take comp time in lieu of the paid overtime. Well, that 30% being paid later as in the comp time bank is really not going to be able to be considered for future overtime issues. We're going to have to pay them now because they know that one way or another they're going to get paid the same either at the end of the year in excess of the threshold or at the current pay cycle. Additionally, without having to add additional manpower, we in the contract with the county have changed the schedule to work 84-hour pay periods, and the four extra hours that are now in that pay period are at straight time compensation at comp time. So we're gaining that additional 4 hours at a straight time equivalent. But again, we need to be prepared to pay those employees who will exceed the threshold within that given year.
I think, Doug, so in accounting terms, you're just saying in previous years we just had this accrued liability that grew, but now we're expensing it every year?
Yes.
Yeah, and also we had, and frankly, just it wasn't clear, and salary money could have been coming from other places and so forth. Main thing is to get down what it really costs on paper.
So now we're hitting it this year, and then next year it's just going to be slight increases.
Well, to get comparables, this is, again, the new normal. I guess that's going to be the phrase from tonight. A new normal so that we can compare in the future.
And to answer your question, yes. I think that the increases that you're going to see next year are going to be more in line with just the cost of living increases. Because, you know, again, in years past, if you go back maybe 3, 4, 5 years, you would see part-time line items in there for maybe $15,000, $20,000 in different budgets, sheriff's budget, jail budget. Those are gone. And the issues of school incentive, that $36,750 that's in school incentive, that's based on our actual expenditure for this current year. So we're not budgeting any increases, even though we know the chances are our new hires that we're bringing in to replace any retirees will probably get the school incentive. So there's no pad in like a, you know, a part-time line. There's no ghost employees. There's no anything to that degree. Before, you could, okay, if we're not getting enough in overtime, well, we can make up for that because we're not really using the part-time pay line.
And don't we have termination money in, up there?
The only termination money that was included, and you'll see that in the sheriff admin line, is we have an employee that has announced his retirement in January of this year.
So it's known. So that's something we've never done before.
Yeah.
That's new money.
Great. Well, it's great that we know that, right?
Right. So that's why you'll see that.
So that means they can hire faster instead of waiting.
Going to go ahead and just administration and county board kind of falls under yours. You can do just quick overview.
Okay. As far as
creative services,
county board, I think we're right in line or have a decrease, including county board and personnel being the main ones. We've tried to keep the county board in line year to year. So I think we were able to do that with our personnel, trying to make a slow reduction here to help the budget with stuff we think we don't need.
It's the 12.1% increase.
Which line?
It's
the overall decrease.
Okay. And administrative
services. That would be Linda.
Okay.
We can
do that one.
Yeah.
And she's had some. She's basically in line.
Okay.
Not a very
are, there,
Are there pay increases budgeted in here for anybody in the admin services area?
In admin services? I think so. You wouldn't answer.
Just the anticipated two-step increases and 2.25. We mm-hmm. Even though for non-union people it's not been approved, we went ahead and put those in there for the budget.
What about for Mr. Cooper?
He's not in there?
He's
yes.
In personnel.
Okay.
That
we'll
get there then.
Okay.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Reference pay increases. When I was on executive council, I voted to take some people's stipends, and I also voted not to allow raises for certain elected officials. And when I did vote for raises for people who had been in their official capacities for less than a year, I regretted that vote. And so if there's automatic 2.25% increases for people that are making over $100,000, that's not a vote that I feel very comfortable making, and I want to officially say that right now. We've asked other people not to take raises. Elected officials who had thousands of people vote for them didn't take raises. Now it's time for the staff to suck it up a little bit. I will vote no for those raises, and I think it's a bad idea if they're in this budget.
Can you address that? It's already.
We try to put a budget together and observe the conservancy principle in accounting, meaning that we're going to take a worst case at. So that's when we do a first draft, we do that. So if there's any possible money, we certainly put it in there. Doesn't mean it needs a stick. This is certainly a first draft. Things can be changed, but.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm just alerting you to that possibility.
I guess so, along that line, is there anybody in this entire budget who gets a raise that's more than 2.25? Or the plus any single person?
You want to answer that, John? I know we have 2.25 and 2.5. I know the state's attorney has given us two different options on raises, and he can address that.
But if, yeah, so if there's not one single person that's like, oh, he moved up,
we're
going to give him a title.
Like a promotion or
well,
something?
As you know, yeah, with no, not from the budget perspective, no.
Okay, so not for the budget perspective, but is there somebody that's going to have a budget increase in here or any increase whatsoever in a title change or whatsoever in the current administration?
We just have COLA in there. Yeah. And
COLA, yeah.
Yeah, with elected officials too, when you approve their budget, you know, my understanding is they can spend it how they want. So you'd have to ask the elected officials. Yeah. So, and we just have COLA in our budget. Cost of living increases. That's it.
So that's a 2.5% increase.
So any other increases for anybody else?
No.
Would come before the board?
There's in this budget, there's no increases other than COLA, if I can blank.
Okay, county board, that's done. Housing authority, that's pretty much the same.
Hey, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, could I get one question in on this on
yeah,
the raises while you're talking about the raises.
Yes, sir.
I'm just looking in the upper right-hand corner here on our sheets, and it has the amount of raises. So for the administrative services, it says $6,136. Is that for FY19? That's going to be the raise?
Yes, that's the payroll sheets that came from Craig. That column I wanted to add because we're, you know, what we talked to like Lisa yesterday, we're talking about over $800,000 in really static, fixed increases that we have to absorb in this year's budget, and it happens year after year. And I wanted to call it out because step increases and the raises, but those are the COLA for every individual in each of those budgets, line by line. It's got a salary that's listed out.
Yeah, that's the first year we're calling out at all. It's
I
all clearly marked. Yeah,
it's a really big number.
Okay, so that's COLA then. It's not. Somebody
step increases and cost of living are in there.
By regulation
it's
by law, correct?
Broken out.
Only in the union. It's not of administrative services, and that it's not a guarantee for Doug or
deputies, right? Clerk, no, or, you know, but
no, they do.
Deputies and stuff. Yeah.
I mean, I assume we would have to do a resolution of something of that sort.
Sure.
To,
yeah.
Or, as Bill is telling you now, and some, I think, my other board members are saying, no increase. No 2% increase for those who are not bound by a contract in administrative services. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's what I meant, Madam Chairman. Certainly I'm not trying to say we should not go with our union contract. Certainly not.
No,
that.
I said union contracts.
Yes,
we have,
ma'am.
To abide by.
Yes, ma'am.
The next one, we did personnel already. Any other questions there in personnel? No? Handle that. What is it? Criminal.
You want to, do you want to look in here? We have some folks that are here that may want to address. We have the circuit clerk, Bob Diver, the regional office of education, the public defender. Tom Gibbons is here.
Do you have any questions or concerns? I do believe, looking at your budget, there's a decrease of, we'll do the state's attorneys. Administration, it looks to be a decrease?
So if I could, what I provided to everyone today was a summary. I thought that would be helpful to the committee and to board members to be able to see all the numbers essentially bottom lined in a single page. And what I provided to you here, you'll see the section in blue and the section in green. These are the total of general revenue expenditures, so expenditures that the county board's going to have to account for in terms of general revenue. The non-colored section is non-general revenue expenditures. Those are amounts that come from other sources that are not do not have to be accounted for by the county board. So I just wanted to be able to break that out so you can see the ones that you're going to have to be calculating into your totals in terms of revenue for the for county property taxes. Those would be in the top section. I laid it out as two different options, and I'll just explain briefly why. Last year when I came before this committee and before board members, I presented a plan and a request, certainly over-ambitious on purpose, and laid out intentionally and obviously so. Our salaries for attorneys are really very, very low, and it certainly causes a lot of pressure and creates a lot of turnover. Yesterday, I was informed another attorney from my office is leaving the office to take a higher paying position somewhere else, and that is now four attorneys in about 4 months. It's a fairly regular occurrence, and we're used to it, but it does seem to be increasing as the legal job market is getting better. It has recovered from the recession. And so law firms are generally starting to pay higher amounts. Last year, I asked for a 15% increase, knowing that was certainly well beyond reasonable. But in our discussions last year, what the board did say is, you know, something would be certainly provided a 5% increase. We increased the starting salary from $42,500 up to $45,000, allows us to begin a little higher, and then we sequentially moved everyone else up by the same amount. So what I've laid out here in blue would simply be the salaries of all employees at the 2.25 amount. That includes those that are under the collective bargaining agreement and the administrative and attorney staff. The section in green would be 2.25% cost of living increase for everyone except for attorneys, and 5% for attorneys. Last year when we talked about it, the board said it would entertain this year continuing the slightly larger increase for the attorney staff to allow us to try to keep pace with the job market. So that's why I put it in here as an option. If you'll see in yellow, in each of those, there's a bottom line number for the general revenue expenditure amount that I'm requesting from the board to be allocated to the state's attorney's office budget, from which I will pay the various line items you'll find in the more detailed accounting that I provided to each of you. That's an issue I would like the board to think about, and I would request that the green, the larger number, be provided, simply because I'm trying to keep hold of my staff, trying to be able to attract better candidates, trying to provide them an opportunity. People coming out of law school generally are now averaging about $120,000 in student loan debt, which is a mountain of debt facing somebody, and when they're making $45,000, that doesn't go very well with also having to pay bills, pay rent, mortgage, raise families, things like that. So I'm trying to keep moving that number forward so that we can increase the attractiveness of the jobs and keep people for longer. We invest a lot of time and energy and money into training, and we certainly want them to stick around so that the citizens of Madison County get the full benefit of all of those things. But the lower salaries do make that more difficult. So that being said, I mean, that's generally, so if we were to go with the 2.25% COLA on all staff members, that would put us at a percentage change from last year's total general revenue budget of 1.89%, which includes the 2.25%. And option two, which would be the 5% increase for the attorney staff, that would be a 3.12% total general revenue budget request increase over last year. The non-general revenue expenditures, if just briefly to go through those, child support, that is a contract with Department of Health Care and Family Services. Victim assistance grant is a grant that we received from the Attorney General's office. The JAG burn grant is a federal grant. Transit is from Madison County Transit District. That is a totally separate entity, although we are statutory counsel for them. Drug asset forfeitures, both state and federal, are monies that are seized from drug traffickers, and those are funds that that are held and discretionary to the state's attorney's office. The automation fund is also a separate fund, and the VOCA grant is a new grant from a new federal grant for a victim advocate. So that's a general breakdown. Now this is my request. Of course, the administration has some other ideas, and so I wanted to go through those things. When I received the administration's proposal for the state's attorney's office budget, I was informed that the only modification to my request was a $60,000 reduction in a part-time employee line. But upon a thorough review of what was provided by the administration, there was in fact $195,000 cut out of my budget. All but $60,000 of it is in non-general revenue expenditure amounts. And just specifically those being expenditures out of our asset forfeiture accounts, which are discretionary to the state's attorney, $60,000 cut from the state's attorney transit budget, which we are required by law to be counsel for Madison County Transit. The administration reduced that to zero. I'm not sure why. They're going to send us a check anyway. So it's going to be used to pay an attorney to do that work. And then the automation budget, which is also not a general revenue budget, which we use for a substantial number of things in the office. Again, not things that you have to account for when you're deciding the tax levy on the citizens of this county. I would like to, however, address the one item that does, in fact, impact the general revenue budget, because that's really where the meat and potatoes is for you. The line item that was proposed to be cut by the administration has to do with part-time pay. And the individuals that are paid by that, I think you may remember from last year, there was certainly a disagreement with the administration about part-time employees at the state's attorney's office. And fortunately, and I'm quite thankful to this committee and the board to have restored those funds to our budget in the end, allowing us to continue with those individuals from whom we get a great deal of work. This particular line item has to do with the hiring of part-time employees who are college and law students. We pay college students to come work for us generally during the summer for a short period of time. They are criminal justice majors, and they do all kinds of work around the office, and they do it at minimum wage with no benefits. We hire throughout the year probably about 10 individuals. Some of those, probably about four of those, are going to be undergraduate students. The rest are law students. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing is basically hiring people who are in law school. When they are first-year law students, they perform the tasks of legal research and writing. We do a lot of briefing on cases, a lot of legal research on complex cases. And we get that essentially from them for about $9 to $10 an hour. That is the beginning of a process for us to evaluate individuals coming into the legal profession, some of whom ultimately will become attorneys in our office. It gives us a very inexpensive way to evaluate their work product and see whether or not they're a good fit for the office. After second year of law school, they receive what is known as a Supreme Court Rule 711 license, meaning they can practice law. They actually prosecute cases in court. They appear in front of judges under the supervision of an attorney, and they do a huge amount of work for us, especially in traffic and misdemeanor court with those gigantic dockets. And again, it allows us to then evaluate their performance in a courtroom in front of a judge and dealing with defendants and attorneys. And then subsequent to graduation from law school, individuals who we intend to hire, who if they pass the bar in and then get sworn in the following November, we keep those people on. We pay them at a substantially reduced rate from what an attorney would make, but we keep them when they come back from their they take time off to go study and take the bar, and then when they come back, we put them back on payroll, and we put them back to work under their Rule 711 license. For those people that we want to keep on staff, the ones that we've identified as the best candidates, we want to have something waiting for them so they're not looking elsewhere in the job market, and we are still paying them substantially less than they're getting paid as an attorney. That's what that $60,000 goes to. I can assure you this program is very successful. I can assure you that from my own personal experience, as a first-year law student, second-year 711, third-year 711, while taking and passing the bar, that this is a great way to find attorneys. It's a relatively small investment in our staff over the long term, and many of our long-term employees are people who were brought in under this program, including myself, First Assistant State's Attorney Jennifer Mudge, head of our criminal division Crystal Uy, and countless other people, other managers in the office, and other people who we have a better shot of keeping people long term when we bring them through this program. And it is a great way to evaluate students and individuals who are interested in this. So I'm asking the county board, this committee, to recommend that amount remain in the budget that I proposed, as it provides tremendous value to us. They do a lot of work while they're here. We get them at a pretty reduced amount, a pretty reduced cost, and the long-term benefits to their continued employment with the county certainly pay off. That's the only of general revenue expenditure where currently there's a difference of opinion between the administration and myself, and so I'd ask this committee and the county board as a whole to consider my position on that. Any questions?
Yeah. Yes,
Tom. Yeah, Tom, if I could, you're talking about option two and the 5% increase, and believe me, I understand your problem. You're trying to retain qualified attorneys.
Yeah.
But I'm a little worried that because I'm thinking maybe a good attorney or a mid-level attorney you have makes $75,000, a 5% increase takes him to $78,750. If he's a good attorney, I don't think that's going to keep him if he gets an offer. Now, I don't know. I'm not saying I know exactly what they're being offered or why they're leaving, but I'm thinking 5% may not keep attorney if they're getting an outside offer. So I'm worried because I think that next year the same thing could happen. You still find yourself, with the economy especially, you're going to be pressed to retain your attorney pool, and they're going to continue to leave. Again, I don't know if that's going to happen, but I can see that happening. So yeah. 5% here, 5% next year, I just wonder if that's the best approach. Now, I'm kind of crossing the line here where I'm not telling you how to do your job, but I mentioned before about trying to think outside the box and solve your own problems type thing. But so I'm going to make a little pitch here, and it's just whatever you think, but maybe if we gave you the 5% increase, use that money as sort of a bonus system for the good attorneys, and then you allocate to give basically larger raises to the good guys that you want to keep. Now, that's going to put you in a position where you got to make a decision, and somebody that's not going to get the raise they used to get versus getting a higher raise, it's going to be could be a conflict there. But and again, getting back to my bottom line.
I think that's a reasonable proposition, and we certainly try to identify the attorneys who are our best performers and do that to a degree. But I think focusing more on that is certainly, I think that's a very reasonable suggestion.
Tom, if we were to, one, you know, I think we're looking at restoring some cuts, but if you were able to put that $60,000 cut somewhere else, could you? Or that certainly we could work it with that, or I know it's, you know, when we get to the end of the day, trying to balance the budget, it's not because, you know, certainly we don't want to inhibit what you do or anyone else, but ultimately, you know, we have to make the revenue numbers work and so forth. Certainly always open to moving cuts to other places if that works, and certainly also looking at this other revenue and see if it can fit there as well. I do know we have the transit money in there, right, John?
And yeah, I'd like to clarify that. There might be some miscommunication somewhere. I had the this line was the transit money. There's no difference, no change year over year, $60,000, Tom. And I think you also mentioned automation. I ran through here just to double check to see if maybe I'd made a mistake. I'm still showing $60,000, which was no change year over year, but that still doesn't make up, I think you said $195,000 difference. Is there another $15,000 somewhere else that I...
Yeah, the federal drug asset forfeiture. I'm just looking at the forms you sent back to me. They're different than what I submitted.
Okay, well, then that must have been just a mistake then, because I'd never done that. This is the sheet I've been sending to Jennifer shows
good.
All the money.
So that's why we're talking about it. Definitely. Good. If you guys have still got it in...
I think it was the thing we had is the 60, and then right certainly... always at the very first, always open to moving that any cuts to other places, but then also because you know your budget better than we do, of course. But also definitely looking to restore things as we get better revenue numbers.
But where would you suggest from our general revenue fund budget that $60,000 come?
Well, I mean, ultimately, I mean, that would be a discussion, and if you had any suggestions, I mean, if there's something very valuable like the part or the college students or the part-time folks, I mean, if there's something less valuable, we can have that discussion on the side or
we can stop ordering paper and pens.
I'm watching changes being made up here. That box keeps popping up, and it's saying who the changes are being sent to. Can you pop that box up?
I don't know. I don't know what box you're talking about. Say if I make a change.
Make a change and save it.
The only changes I've made is just color coding. So let me highlight this cell.
John likes to save a lot. I do know that. He hits the save button.
Oh, yeah, I just hit save. I just hit save. So what did it show?
Up.
Yeah, it's saving.
Right. Who are all these people that this is being sent to?
It's kept on a secure shared folder. It's limited.
It's limited. Okay, so I saw names on there. Who all were?
Me, Doug, I think Rob and Bruce.
Rob.
Dorman.
And Bruce.
Cooper.
Why are they involved in the budget of anything to do with the state's attorney's office?
They're not involved.
They're not involved. Why are we sharing this information with them?
It's just where it's being saved on the network.
It's just the way I named the folder.
Yes.
Well, one concern I have that we had last year, and I was afraid it was rearing its ugly head again this year, but perhaps not, is that a statutory requirement had been arbitrarily cut. And I'm glad to hear that that's not true. And hopefully, through this entire budgeting process, absolutely every statutory line item should be funded, period. We have to follow the law. And so I would hope the administration will check with all the cost center managers and ensure that every statutory line item is taken care of. Regarding the $60,000 that Mr. Gibbons would like restored, I have to say from my own personal life, I did intern in the government as a young man and had some opportunities. And I think it's one of the ways that we involve our young people in government and provide them possibilities. And when I hear Mr. Gibbons describe the process by which certain individuals come to the state's attorney's office, it sounds like, for lack of a better word, a pretty good farm league to bring people up to the bigs. And so I like that in the item. The third thought I had as I listened to this is I'm very concerned if we have a brain drain. If we're losing experienced attorneys, that somehow we have given the opportunity to come into a full professional job and then we lose them. I'm concerned about that, and I'm wondering how does this, quite obviously, Mr. Gibbons, you complete your mission, but how does losing four guys in 4 months impact your ability to function and to complete your mission as state's attorney? I'd kind of like to hear a little bit about that.
Well, it has a really substantial impact because while in the process of, you know, we're in the process of looking for candidates, we're finding we're getting fewer and fewer resumes to fill those jobs because the private market has increased. So we get fewer and fewer candidates, and the quality of the candidates does suffer. While we're in the job search process or in the hiring process, other members of the staff are having to carry the load of the caseloads for those individuals. So they're not able to pay the type of attention to their cases that they ought to be paying at 100% where they're doing their own work. It puts a lot of stress on them. It puts additional stress on the support staff, trying to keep that coverage sort of farmed out to people that, you know, the support staff members, the secretaries generally have a group of attorneys that they work with, and so they're trying to make sure that the attorney who is now gone, that position that's gone, that caseload is still being managed, but they have to deal with multiple people who are managing those cases, so it's much harder, and it certainly, that's a short-term impact. The long-term impact is, like you said, the brain drain concept is absolutely accurate. We have people who become specialists in certain areas working there for long periods of time in order to train somebody back up. For example, our child support division, the 4D, federal 4D division paid for by Department of Health Care and Family Services. There's about a six-month learning curve on that job because it is a very technically specific job that operates under a very narrow statutory band, but there's a whole process that they have to learn. You can't learn it in bits and pieces like you can misdemeanor and traffic. I can teach somebody to prosecute a seatbelt ticket in a day. That's not that hard, a seatbelt ticket, but processing child support cases is much, there's a whole statutory framework that they have to learn that operates in a comprehensive way on each case. So they're not little cases. Like misdemeanor and traffic, you can learn, you know, in a matter of several weeks. I've trained many attorneys to become misdemeanor and traffic prosecutors in my career as a prosecutor since, you know, the 1990s. And you can do that in bits and pieces over time, and they, you know, progressively over time become proficient. But in a situation like our child support division where we just lost one individual yesterday, it's going to take 6 months to train somebody up. It takes 6 months to get somebody really up to speed where they can completely leave the nest and be handling those cases on their own. So it has a long-term impact. And, in some of these situations, people prosecuting violent crimes, it takes time to get people into that unless you hire somebody from the outside who we interviewed somebody and they wanted to, walk in the door being paid $85,000. Well, that's whereas we're paying most entry-level people now $45,000. So it has a substantial impact on our ability to do the mission day-to-day, but also long-term. It weighs and taxes on other parts of the office's functions while everyone is trying to cover and then train people to do the work that has to be done when they won't be paying 100% attention to the workload that they already have themselves responsible.
I want to thank you for your very complete answer. I think I have a picture of what you go through when this happens. And it concerns me as a board member because we have to have the state's attorney's office functioning fully and firing on all cylinders. So if we do have a brain drain because we don't pay enough, we need to think about how to solve that problem, in my humble opinion.
Well, we only have so much to go around, so, you know, it's...
I agree with that, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much, members of the committee, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
John Orkowski? Yeah. John, do you want to go over the changes to John's budget, John, the other John?
Right here, these three lines right here. Two summer interns. The other we reduced back to this current year levels. Those are your expense line items. And the capital outlay.
You know, I guess I'll start where he left off, talking about summer interns. In my case, I try to budget two at $7,200 each. We use those in two capacities. Tom gave you the one. It's a three-month job interview. Myself, Jenny Smith, Morgan Hermanson, Mary Copeland, Dylan Gerald, and my investigator, for that matter, all came to me through internships, came to the office through internships. But more importantly, and the reason that I really would like to hold on to my internships, is they cover my summer vacations. As Tom alluded, Supreme Court Rule 711 allows second-year law students to actually practice law if they are under the direct supervision of an attorney from my office. We cover virtually a misdemeanor docket a day. And as Tom again alluded to, we can train that kind of docket, that kind of lawyer to do that kind of work in a relatively short period of time. So we bring in, during the summer when they're not in school and they have their 7-Eleven license, these interns. We put them on the misdemeanor docket so that my other attorneys who are on vacation, we still got that docket covered not with one but two people like we usually do. So because some of those dockets are 150, 200 cases that we got to resolve literally from 9 o'clock in the morning until noon or from 1 o'clock until 4:30. So it's a quick, high volume, got to know what you're doing thing, but you got to have a license to do it. And we basically use those interns for the purpose of filling in vacations for full-time lawyers who are on vacation because we still have to cover those dockets during the summer, which is when most of my attorneys, because they have kids in school, take their vacations. So that's one of the things I want to talk about. The other couple items I want to talk about, I can live with, you know, a little belt tightening, and we can figure out how to do this or how to do that on some of the items and restoring it. I had asked for like $500 here and $1,000 there. There's a couple items that I think are fairly critical in addition to the two interns. One is I desperately need a copy machine, not a big copy machine, a little desktop copy machine, over at the CJC. We don't have one. When we need to make copies over there, and we're working over there, and especially on Monday mornings, which are just pandemonious, we have to go down to the state's attorney's office and ask them to copy stuff, some of which is confidential. We're not even supposed to be sharing with them. But, you know, they're nice enough to do it. Secretaries are good about it on those days. It's inefficient. It's not the right way to do business, and that's one of my capital expenditures. The other two, the one I can cover and the other one I quite honestly didn't think I was going to get anyway, even though I think it's necessary. But that's a mere $3,500 and probably a little less than that if when I get down to serious negotiations with these people. for what I need to be able to. I've now got four offices down there since they've expanded my facility, and we need at least the ability to do a little bit of copying. I'm not talking about a standalone high-speed copier like I have in my office up here. I'm talking about a little desktop thing that we can put something on and hit the button, and it gives us a few copies so that we can pass them out to state attorneys or whatever we need to do with them. So under the capital expenditure, that's one. The interns was one. This year, my office supply budget for just paper clips and stationery was $6,500. I mean, we're not talking huge money here. We're going to exhaust that and then some. Paper's up. Our caseload's up, which generates, every case generates a ton of paper. And, you know, I asked for $1,500, which in this overall budget is not much money, but a $1,500 increase in my office supplies, because realistically, that's what we're spending. And I tried when I brought in the budget and sent it, and I think you all got, well, I know you all got, because I sent a copy to every county board member of the budget. I laid out each line item and why. And that's just a recognition of the fact that we're doing more work, need more paper clips, need more pens. I've added a lawyer. And, quite honestly, things cost more. And I'm going to exhaust that. And I try to be realistic in what I give the board. And I think if you look at what I requested this year, when you talk about things like office supplies, and, you know, the other one was, I did request an extra $1,000 in travel over last year. You have to look at two line items in my budget request, because in the past we put mileage and travel expenses, which would include hotels or whatever, all in one line item. And I added $1,000 to the travel thing and then split it, put part of it in a line item called mileage and part of it in a line item called travel. Because it was pointed out to me at one of the talks with the auditor's office at one time that I really ought to be singling out mileage as being different from travel expenses. And so I put $1,000 there in the mileage and then upped the travel a little bit. So bottom line is I added $1,000 in between travel and mileage, I added $1,000 to my request. So The other stuff I can, you know, swallow, and I didn't think it was frivolous when I asked for it. I still don't, but I can live with it. I understand you guys got a job to do, too, in terms of trying to balance things. But I would really ask you to reconsider on my summer help or my interns, whatever you want to call them, and on office supplies and travel. Yes, sir.
I have a concern, Madam Chairman and Mr. Hume, that last year we had issues with part-time, and sometimes the administration at the first round wanted to cut these things completely out of budget. And one of the things that I thought I discovered as I listened more and more, Madam Chairman, is that there's a reason for these part-time people. And one of the reasons is that it means that the county doesn't have to hire full-time people. And what I see Mr. Gibbons and Mr. Rakowski doing, correct me if I'm wrong, anyone, is using these part-time positions creatively to save us money while completing the mission. One, we don't have to hire somebody full-time. And two, apparently they're used as like a farm system to provide competent attorneys for the county. And so I'm very concerned that we're initially thinking of cutting these part-time people, because in other cost centers, the part-time people have also, there was reasons that they were there. And so I think we need to be very sensitive on this issue and listen to our professionals very carefully before cutting any of these part-time positions.
May I just
word
it?
Absolutely.
Phil, and just...
Ma'am.
talking with that, you know, last year we increased his staff and asked that the jail population, with that, the state's attorney and the other entities that are involved in that, to help us keep our jail population down. And the hiring didn't happen, so there should have been some excess in his budget. Didn't happen for like 6 months. So there should have been some excess in his budget if you don't hire them for the first 6 months of the year. Anyway, and it did not come true that our jail population was down, so I have some concerns with the state's attorney and the public defenders. I know our felony rate is up, and I know there are other concerns, but yet we had Great Lakes discussion that we would increase these budgets and that we would get some bang for... Let me rephrase that. It's been a long day. That we would have some results to help decrease the jail population, which it's finally coming down, but for most of last year, our jail population has been greater than 320 to 340.
Yes, Madam Chairman, I understand your point. Perhaps Mr. Rakowski or State's Attorney would like to speak to that point. However, I'm not understanding how funding the part-time people, which seems to complete a valid mission, addresses that issue of why we are maybe having more people in the jail than we would like.
What I'd like to reiterate is that how they staff, whether it's part-time, full-time, if they can stay in their budget, I truly don't care how they get there. I prefer part-time, as in it's more cost-effective usually to the county.
But yes, ma'am.
That's their choices, and they are their own department heads. As the state's attorney, is how he staffs his positions is his if he stays within his budget.
I guess Tom's gone.
No,
Tom's still here.
Tom's right there.
So when you hire a part-time person, a state's attorney or a public defender, a part-time person, are there any indirect costs? Is it just the salary?
It is strictly the salary in my situation. I'm assuming it is for Tom, too.
Is that true, Tom?
Yeah, for students.
Yeah.
We're talking about our students.
It's well, just straight. I mean, okay, pay them the money, no benefits, no bar dues, no nothing.
Yeah, okay. So, but in the state's attorney's office, are part-time, you have people who are not full-time. You have several, don't you, staff that are not full-time?
Attorneys,
yes.
Set of people. That wasn't a line item that was under consideration. But, yeah, we have actual attorneys.
Right.
But the ones that were under consideration were all students.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's just say for the attorneys, are there any other indirect costs with them?
There are some that are grandfathered in with the health insurance.
Okay.
Part-time.
Right. I knew that. Do they get anything else? That
they don't get vacation. They don't get
no. But
sick,
no. No.
They don't get,
okay.
And in fact, the majority of the part-time attorneys have been paid the same amount since. Well, let's see. I was making $12,000 a year as a part-time assistant state's attorney in prosecuting cases in Granite City, starting in 2004, and we still pay $12,000.
Can I ask Mr. Gibbons to point out just one that I know off the top of my head? She represents us down at Special Service Area Number 1. Deb Besserman's a part-time, is that correct?
Yes, she's 3 days a week. She works for she handles several different things. She does all the work for Special Service Area, including collections and advising at the meetings. She also works in our General Civil Division.
And just not to put you on the spot, and maybe you don't know the answer to this, but can you tell everybody how much money that she's recuperated in her efforts for Special Service Area and unpaid debts?
I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars. She's doing substantially better than the situation we had previously, which was not.
which, gentlemen, is what the point that I'm trying to bring. These yeah. these part-time people can be very valuable to this county, and they shouldn't be overlooked.
That's a good illustration.
Kurt's a big fan. Yeah, absolutely. She's doing a great job.
If I could address the one thing about, again, the jail, because we all live with the jail. I live with the jail every morning at 8:30 in the morning when I open up my first email, because the first email is always look at the jail population and that. We are moving cases. Monday and Tuesday of this week is just an example, and I'm just picking. I pled 10 felonies in 2 days. And I'm not talking about my office. I'm talking about John Rakowski. My office, you know, did a lot more than that. But, you know, moved 10 cases. Three of those were in jail. One went to prison. Two got out. You know, that is, you know, we're pedaling as fast as we can. As far as filling the vacancies, as Tom has just said, the resumes aren't coming in anymore like they used to. I used to get one or two a month, and around bar time, I'd get five or six. Yesterday, I spent $349 of taxpayer money to send out through a professional search firm to 25,000 Illinois law firms an opening that I have coming up, because I've just been informed one of my attorneys is leaving me again. For the same reason that he's talking about. And already have gotten, actually, my first response to it. I did it yesterday and already got my first resume in today and that. So that's how scarce new talent is right now. I have never, ever in my 20-some-odd years as chief public defender ever had to, you know, if anything, I never told anybody I had vacancies, because when I did, I had to make nine people mad when I turned them down and hire one. Now I'm in the position of the Madison County Bar Association put out the notice. The Tri-City Bar Association's put out the notice. I have job listings up on St. Louis University Law School, Warsh University Law School, University of Illinois, Carbondale. I've also talked to the directors of the two legal clinics at Carbondale and at SLU. Because they have in the past sent me attorneys and sent me recommendations. It's getting a lot harder to find lawyers. And like I said, that's one of the reasons I love the interns. Is I view it as a three-month job interview, and it really has provided me some very good lawyers.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
One question. It said it was for carpet, so it wasn't for carpet. So it was for office supplies?
Well, I had three capital line items, three cap requests, not regular line items.
I got John's requests.
My three capital requests were carpeting, the computer system I've talked to you about before, and the copy machine. Those were the three cap. The carpeting's got some mildew problem because we had flooding down in the basement, but I can find 15.
John, we're working hard on the carpet, too. That, throughout the whole county, yeah. I mean, it's a big deal. And we might have this conversation once a week.
That's the one that I've been down here before on, where I wanted to put in an independent network because of the other problems that, you know, I'm not trying to open up a can of worms, but, you know.
John, and I'll get you a copier over there. We'll get a copier.
Thank you.
And your carpet, there is a lot of bad carpet. It's something that Rob Schmidt's been dealing with, and he hears it from me all the time, and it makes a statement that we have people working in some places that, you know, the carpet, frankly, it's terrible. So, small thing, but I think it's a big thing.
It's getting people to lay it. They're busy laying carpet somewhere else.
Bob, go ahead. John, do you want to highlight to the committee where the cuts we made to Bob Diver's budget?
Three items I have highlighted up there. The easier to see if I go to his budget. Right up.
Everybody. Cut on that. Let me cut from what?
His proposal, yes. His request, yes, absolutely. Well, I looked to see if that one came back on, Sheriff, and it did, so.
You have to replace it.
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
Maybe this begins with some old business, but at the end of the last finance meeting, I had, when everyone was reporting they may be over budget, I said that we probably would be in deficit of about $19,000 in this budget, and I asked the direction. And I was asked, told to give a request to Doug, so when I met with Mr. Thompson the other day, he said that he had this in a folder that he found that we had a request for an additional $19,100 to meet expenses for this year. So when I drafted my total budget for 19 and submitted it, I had added that $19,000 that I knew I'd be in deficit, which brought my budget to $499,272, which is still over $90,000 less than my budget was. Which was a considerable savings that we absorbed a variety of ways. The recommended budget that I received from the administration cut $73,316 from last year's budget on top of that already $90,000, which essentially leaves me with very short staff. The three people that were identified and our legal counsel that would be removed leaves us essentially with no school inspectors. Now, these are part-time people, and these people do not have any benefits. And this is in the budget, but they actually are paid on hours that they are involved with their work. I am concerned. I mean, if you do not want to fund three part-time people, if you want to put two full-time people in the budget, that's fine with me too. But then you're going to be paying benefits and increases in pay. These people have had we don't increase their pay. This has been a set pay. Mr. Schooley is an attorney that does all legal counsel for the ROE. This is property detachments. We have a resident this past summer that detached some property in Bethalto to the Edwardsville School District. And we had detachments from the Edwardsville District to Roxana. Legal counsel must represent this. If you want to eliminate that, that's going to then go to the state's attorney's office. I didn't hire the legal counsel. I retained him. $21,777 is not much for legal counsel, as you all know as county board members. State's attorney Bill Hain and a predecessor, Mr. Briggs, had recommended that there be education legal counsel, so it is not dealt with by the state's attorney's office. I've just retained the legal counsel over the years and realize its value. So I've already eliminated all my summer interns. I did that last year. We had co-op students that had great experiences in our office too, and one of them now is a full-time employee. I've eliminated those. I have no place to cut. You can cut this. And then we are not fulfilling, as Mr. Chapman mentioned, a statutory responsibility, and that's to provide compliance and school inspections. We're required by law to do that. I'll be glad to provide you with the statute if you want to see it. And that's what those individuals do. I have over 91 buildings that I must inspect. The fire marshal's office couldn't get through these buildings if we didn't assist them. They also inspect these. This is an issue of public safety that we're maintaining with these people. So I'm still requesting the $19,100 of additional money for FY18. If I need to appear at finance at the October meeting, I'd like that on the agenda for approval. I'd like that put in my budget. The only other issue that was in this that was cut was a recommended $6,500 stipend for the next regional superintendent. I'm not asking this for me because it won't be me. But other elected officials, the treasurer, the auditor, I think the sheriff, receive a stipend from the state. The regional superintendent receives no salary, no benefits from the county, no health insurance, no retirement benefit, nothing. So there was a stipend of $10,400 that was awarded to the regional superintendent before I came into office. I've never asked for it. It was there. It was there in reciprocating compensation as to what other elected officials get from the state of Illinois. So I said to Chairman Ciampoli, well, if you don't believe that $10,004 is fair, how about the same that other elected officials get, a $6,500, which I just think is a matter of ethics. If you wish to eliminate it, the next guy will be the only elected official that doesn't receive a stipend. So that is why I had asked for that. So those are my requests for basic operations. We're operating with three less staff people than when I came into the office. In fact, John Thompson told my office manager that he flagged her because she's got excessive vacation time built up. I literally don't want her to take off. I have no one to do payroll because I don't have an assistant office manager anymore. I eliminated that position. That was eliminated in 2017. That's how I save $60,000. Okay, I've eliminated any part-time internship positions. Those were all eliminated last year, all in the $90,000 cut. And we've eliminated supply items. We have no capped outlay. John asked me about an IT expenditure. We're not asking for that. We're just asking for the basic amount of funds that are needed to meet our duties. So that's what's asked for in this budget.
Any questions? Yes.
I'm just curious. You're running an almost $20,000 deficit. Why would we make it better than $170,000?
That's a good question. I was getting ready to ask the same thing.
Well, you know, when we balance the budget, we look at everybody's needs. Bill Schooley and paying for a lawyer when, you know, the state's attorney is the lawyer for the county. And I'm sure that's their obligation, is to be representative to each department. So I'm not sure. I'm not very aware of the Bill Schooley deal. I'm not sure what the retainer issue deal is. I'm not sure about any of that or why it's there. And so certainly that's something that should be looked at.
So then are we going to add that money to his budget so he can hire somebody to do it?
Certainly. Everything should be looked at it to make sure that we get we pay for things that need to be paid for. If the state attorney is going to do it, and maybe there's a cost there, maybe there's not.
Right.
And when I saw this, I mean, I'm not going to sign off on this. It's just some reason. I'm not even worried about Bill Schooley today. I'm more worried about the three part-time inspectors that we need. So maybe Rob can say something too, because there are inspectors that help us out with the Freeman School and a couple other things that look like we need a third asset.
So. I'm looking at just total numbers. From 2016, total budget of $614,128 came in under budget. 2017, $590,91 came in under budget. 2018, cut down to $457,885, and he's no longer coming in under budget. He's $19,100 over. I don't see how he can do any more.
And how
much? Madam Chairman.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry if I cut you off, Mr. Hume.
No, it's fine. No, Phil, I was. No, go ahead, please.
I'm concerned about the inspector's positions. I'm not sure exactly who should pay for them, but quite obviously we need them. I'm reading our agreement signed in 2009 between Mr. Diber, provided through Mr. Fasson here, and it says a lessee, which would be the school, shall be solely responsible for the cost of all maintenance and repairs of the premises. Then it goes on to say, the determination of what maintenance and repairs to perform on the premises and the timing thereof shall be agreed upon between the lessee and the lessor. So quite obviously, we need somebody there figuring out what the repairs are.
Phil, can I ask what property that's on and what agreement is that?
This is the Freeman School.
There's a point of clarification I want to make, Phil. The building inspectors don't just inspect the county property. These are the 91 public schools and 38 non-public schools. When Father McGibney was going to open, they could not open and have accreditation without myself doing a walk-through building inspection for health life safety measures. When Edwardsville District 7 built an Olympic-sized swimming pool, I literally had a person at that site three times a week for it to make code, and I was there personally every day the last 10 days before it opened because it wasn't ADA accessible, and they were asking for an occupancy permit, and I was there with the contractor telling them everything that had to be in place. So what I'm saying is I respect your citing of that lease agreement, but these inspectors don't just do one building. They're working in 91 buildings like South Roxana this week that had a water line break that's got severe damage.
Yes, sir. I appreciate your clarification.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that quite obviously we need to attend to our properties and make sure that our young people and our staff are safe. And I can understand why somebody has to provide inspectors for this to include the building that we lease to you. And so I am concerned, having listened to my colleague, Mr. Pollard, that we have cut you and you're under budget, and now the consideration is to cut you another $70,000. I think everybody needs to get what's fair. And listening to that, I'm not sure it's fair. So let me say that.
Thank you.
How we best go to solve this to ensure the safety of our young people and our staff, I think, is something we need to work on together, and we definitely need to finance. It's not something we can punt on. It's not something we can hope works out okay after we cut the money. We need to figure out how to fund this, in my humble opinion.
We're doing as economically effective as we can.
But isn't it true, though, Madison County isn't your only revenue source, right? Most of your budget comes from the state. Isn't that correct?
Sure. You had an annual report that was put in your mailbox that looks like this. And our office also brought in county services, as this is indicated in the report, $2.7 million. So most of the people who work for us are not even paid for by the county. They're paid for by, like, DHS grants, Department of Human Service, or they're paid by what's called the ROEISC Services Grant, which is the money that we actually operate Freeman School with. Or we have other grants that we write for, like our truancy grant. You know, truancy is a county responsibility. There's not $1 budgeted in the county budget for truancy because we finance it 100% through a state grant that we write for. And I hope the next regional superintendent is a grantsman and continue to bring $2.7 million of services to Madison County.
Well, if I understood Mr. McCray's question, what it popped in my mind was, if we were not to fund these three positions, and I'm not saying that we should not, Mr. Diver,
right.
This is a what if. If we were not to fund these three positions, how would they be funded?
They won't.
They
won't be funded because this money that I provided you in the report I gave you, the 2.7, those are restrictive funds, and they can only be spent for particular programs. Like we can pay salary for instruction. We cannot pay for office staff. We cannot pay for someone that processes building permits. Should be part of our budget.
Well, it looks like some of our board members, finance, would like a little bit of funding brought back to education. Okay. So we can look into that.
Can I just ask what was the even thought or the justification to just cut that?
Well, certainly, Mike, when you go through the whole budget, you need to make a revenue number. You have to make decisions. Certainly, nothing here is written in stone. It's something we can certainly look at the inspectors and so forth and see if we can bring back funding.
Was it something that maybe, because I didn't clearly understand what they did until just now either, is it something maybe you or John or somebody looked at and just really didn't understand what they were looking at? Is that
No, when we look at things, they do have a lot of money and from state and federal. Is it federal too? Grants. But you look at that, you know, a lot of different departments have needs. Again, you're weighing it against the whole. So we certainly will look at this and take another crack at it, if that's what the committee's desire is.
I would like a directive on the 18 requests to the 19. One, I will do exactly what you would like for me to do. Do you want me to come to the October meeting to make this request? What do I need to do, or do you want to deny it right now? I just would like some direction because I made this request 2 months ago. I've heard nothing about it, and I just want to know what I should plan to do.
Pardon me, Mr. Diber, I missed you gave a number of the request, and I want to look at the document if it's here.
Sure. I had given you a handout, and it was the deficit number here on the FY18 budget of $19,100 that we were short on. And as I had indicated, that's still over $90,000 less than the previous year's budget, which is a substantial amount of money for any department to save.
Dr. Diber, I mean, I got that request last week, the day before finance, after the agenda went out, so I can prepare an appropriation resolution.
I had submitted that request July 31st. Okay.
You usually do that later in the year, though. I mean,
the year end.
Yeah. That's usually, I think she's following the normal time schedule for that.
I mean, I do remember Dr. Diver being heavily hit in the last budget. I mean, heavily hit. And I'll take part of the credit for that, part of the blame for that. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to his budget and missed a few things there. As Doug said, I mean, it's a vast budget. But I just don't know how he can take a hit again. I really don't. Looking at what happened to him last year in the budget, we had to make tough decisions last year. I was there for a lot of it. And he did take a lot of tough hits last year, and I don't know how he can take these. I just don't.
I think we should look at trying to restore some of it and come back and get with
Dr. Diver, excuse me.
Do you want me to attend the October finance meeting on this 19-1? I mean, is it necessary? I just want to know, so I put it on my calendar.
Do you normally do that for the December meeting?
If we do it at year end, if you're asking to do it,
okay,
it's not mid year anymore. It's the end of year, but
okay.
Go ahead.
I'm concerned that I hear his question is an honest question, and I hear him between a rough and a hard place because a rock and a hard place because which is a rough spot because he's in deficit, and quite obviously he can't remain in deficit, and so he's asking us, as I would if I was in his spot, am I going to get this money or not? And I think that's a fair question. I don't think he should have to wait until 11:59:59 to find out. I mean, that doesn't sound very reasonable to me personally. So
on the emergency appropriations for that, and then deal with the other issues at the next finance meeting.
The emergency appropriation for last year?
For the deficit that he has. I mean, we've got to pay it. I mean,
that's a projection, though, right?
You're projecting.
So he's not out of it. It's not like there's not money.
It's not. Some of it has not been spent yet. Right. And we're not going to just go out and spend $19,000 on supplies. That's not it. It's that, you know, I may have to make a layoff before the October 15th pay is the reason I'm asking. Or the layoff would have to be, you know, so there's no pay for the rest of the fiscal year. Okay? And that's the decision. That's where I'm at.
Oh, sure. Yeah, whatever the auditor's office recommends, sure.
You're saying you can't pay it.
So you're not recommending it, though?
Well, I don't know. I should have to say that.
Here's what I'm saying, Lisa. If we run payroll at the rate where we're running right now, okay, when on December 1st we're going to be $19,100 over our budget.
Okay.
Okay? So...
Not office supplies.
Not office supplies, no. We cut out of office supplies over $20,000. We no capital outlay or anything this year.
I think that's an important clarification. It isn't like frivolous spending here that we're... I mean, people need to be paid in a timely fashion, which is in part why I pushed the issue, is to figure out, okay, what do we really need to do here to be fair to the people involved in the school system and to Mr. Diver? So, you know, are we going to have an emergency appropriation to take care of this so people don't go unpaid or so somebody doesn't get laid off or not? Because I would hate to see anybody laid off.
Well, it seems that, just speaking, the most reasonable thing to do is be to prepare, and we can debate it at the October meeting. This is all kind of new to us right now, so it's hard for us to digest it, I'm sure. So
I agree with that.
If you don't mind coming to the October meeting, I guess. That would be.
Or just put the emergency appropriation now. We know you hear his argument unless there's some new...
I guess the problem is, though, if you're waiting until the last minute...
No, October. So the next... Well, what is the...
You said December on the pay, Mike.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's likely we'll have another meeting. Probably. We'll probably have another meeting before then, too, to be honost.
October 10th.
All right. I'll be there. Thank you. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Dr. Diver.
Yes, Rob.
Rob, well, I guess Rob's the last one here, last one standing. And I'm... Unless you want to talk about your budget, Rick, and there's no changes there. It is.
Let me just say very quickly that I think we're satisfied with our budget. I think we've shown over the history of my stay in office that we don't ask for anything more than what we need. I think this request this year, and Doug, you're okay with it, I guess. Doug's okay with it. I'm sorry, we have.
No. Nope.
You're not?
Sorry.
You have three.
Yeah. Peter vote anyway if you guys are with me. So anyway, it's a 2.25%.
I'm not satisfied.
She can live with it. 2.25% raise plus. I think we had a small increase in the CAFR contract, and that's it basically. That's it.
So Rick's happy. So Rick, everyone's happy. Well, we need to move on to Rob Schmidt facilities. So as you know, we added two porters. Rob can explain that. I think they're highly needed because we certainly, with CR systems, our janitorial contract, they get here, they do a repetitive kind of cleaning thing, and it is a low-cost cleaning solution. For what they do it for a very low cost. But there are maintenance issues, cleaning and upkeep that certainly does never get done. I mean, I know Rob Schmidt, you know, we went through it took well-trained, skilled craftsmen to go through the vents and clean them. We had dust this big going into the vents. I mean, it's just, and then if you look at some of the painting we're doing in certain things, you know, walls get bumped, things get spilled. 20% of the days it's either rains or snows or something. And then we have issues, detention home, jail, with those kind of things. During the day, this is a public building, and all of our buildings are generally public buildings, where we invite the public in here, and I think we want to give them a good impression of Madison County. Oftentimes, There are things that are from the public, spills or bathroom issues. We also, in the courthouse, we get a number of children. We get families that are breastfeeding. There are certainly cleanliness issues are an important thing, and we want to keep up on it. We want to have a nice presentable facility that's clean for our workers, for the public, and frankly, when we send people who are highly skilled that could be working on a plumbing issue, an electrical issue, or an HVAC issue to do something that we could be paying someone else much less, that's where the porters are. That's the idea there. And they can keep up on things. And so the Craftsman 3 is a craftsman that would be dedicated to the courthouse and the detention home. And I'll let you go.
50% of that
time would be, it's a craftsman three position, 50% of his time would be dedicated.
Is your mic on?
50% of his time would be dedicated to the jail and 50% to the detention home.
Because those are, they're ongoing maintenance issues, right?
They're ongoing maintenance issues.
These are older buildings.
To be frank with you, we're not doing it. I mean, we're still playing catch-up.
And basically what we're saying with the porters is those people get pulled off jobs,
well,
too.
The porters, take, for instance, the law library. We started cleaning upholstery, and I just so happened to bring in my upholstery cleaner from home. And the amount of dirt that was coming out of the upholstery and the chairs, it was totally disgusting. Those are the type of things that we need to be keeping up on daily. If you look at the couches at the front door, there's stains on all of them. You know, these stains are happening during the business hours, and we don't have a day porter here that's cleaning up these items. Carpet's always been a big item of concern, even at the sheriff's department. He just leaned over to me and said, our carpet's disgusting. Our carpet is disgusting. It's disgusting throughout all the buildings. And what we've been doing up to this point is we've been asking the departments to pay for carpet, and we've been installing it with our skilled craftsmen. But by adding these day porters, we can start addressing some of these spills during the day and hopefully save some of the new carpet that we're putting in.
And longer-term cleaning issues, railings and other things, walls. But I think the value also comes in, certainly, with snow and so forth. You get people walking in with salty, it's slip and fall stuff, too.
It's polishing the floors during the day. It's taking care of the restrooms where somebody misses or, I mean.
The fourth floor.
Three calls today regarding the women's restroom on the first floor. Those are the type of things that we need to be addressing throughout the day. I frankly get embarrassed sometimes whenever we get a call regarding the restrooms, and then we go in there and find out what it looks like. And these are things that need to be kept up on during the day. We can't wait until CR Systems comes in at night. So that's the reason for the two porters, day porters, as I call them. It's to take care of the specialty items, cleaning the bugs out of the lights, wiping down the woodwork, cleaning the rails in the atrium area here, assisting the skilled craftsmen, holding the off-fall end of a board being cut, or assisting by holding a light in an area where, a skilled craftsman's working. So that's the reason for the porters, day porters. The Craftsman 3 that I asked for, that is to stay on top of the detention center and stay on top of the jail. We're investing a lot of money into the jail, and I would like to have a part-time person over there learning what we're putting into the jail and knowing the system that's going in, and hopefully taking care of some of the maintenance issues that have resulted in this overall project. The jail is just the first part of a lot of repairs that need to be done here in the county. The detention center is going to be coming up here shortly. I've identified about $900,000 worth of work there. And this is all a result of deferred maintenance. So this is an attempt to get on top of some of these items.
Madam Chairman, I'm very appreciative of this move of the administration to supply personnel to keep up our buildings. I must say I feel the previous administration failed us. In my tours of the jail, my tours of the detention center, and frankly the upkeep of this building, which was a very expensive investment by the taxpayers, they didn't take care of it. And we need to take care of it. We need to do better by the taxpayers who give us such marvelous facilities. We need to care for them. And the only way you can do that is with people on the ground doing the job. So I'm most hopeful that these new positions to protect our investment in the jail and the detention center will happen. I do have, and maybe perhaps now is not the time, but I do want to raise at some point in time some issues about the detention home budget.
Anyone else?
I also want to get to the detention home budget as well.
Before we go there, I have one question, if I could,
sure.
For Rob. Rob, on the your admin budget here, under your salaries, there's a line. I wonder if you can explain that to me. It's a painter's district council benefits. I noticed in 18 it wasn't budgeted for. It looks like you think it's going to cost $26,000 roughly. And then next year you're looking at $37,000. Can you just explain what that is?
Last year that was all included in the salary line item. We broke it out because that is a union painter, and his benefits are different from all other employees. But it was budgeted last year. It was just in the overall number. So we broke it out to where we can tell exactly what it is.
Okay, you're expecting to be a 35% increase next year?
Excuse me?
You're expecting to be a 35% increase because it's $26,000 right now you're estimating. Next year it's $37,000.
I don't have that in front of me, but that's what the number is going to be for a year's salary.
It was last year for part of a year, or maybe John and I will double check that.
February.
And we'll double check that number, Don.
While we're on the painter, I have a question. I happened to bump into him the other day, and nice enough fellow, but I'm trying to remember, didn't we only approve a part-time painter? That was a vote I remember. Where did the full-time painter come from?
Full-time painter.
We only did part-time.
You did?
Yeah. That's what I remember approving was a part-time painter. And I think the discussion was that you could work them all year round. It just had to be half the week. Do you remember? Anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
That was not my recollection. I don't really have one necessarily. I didn't think we were hiring a part-time. I know Rob had requested an additional FTE for a painter. That's what I thought. I thought it was a full-time. But I could be wrong.
I thought it was part-time.
Yeah.
My recollection.
Really?
Okay.
I think we need to look at that.
Yeah.
I see a lot of work in this area, too. I'm standing outside talking to Rob just the other day, and I mean, there's bubble gum all over the ground that hadn't been picked up in a long time. It looks terrible.
On the cement?
What's that?
On the cement?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the concrete project is before it's wrapped up, we're going to get out there and spray that and get all the gum off.
Yeah, he told me that was in the plan.
But often it is obviously getting to it all. You know, certainly all the concrete.
I'm not knocking Rob.
But it definitely needs to be done, absolutely.
Well, regarding the painter,
I see what his argument is.
Regarding the painter, we asked for a certain, you guys gave me a certain amount. And if you look at our budget this year, I think that we're coming in under as far as the salaries are concerned.
But I think the argument now, though, Rob, is now we're getting into having to pay for benefits, and that's not what we had discussed in that meeting.
Do we always have to pay benefits? Isn't it always have to pay benefits as far as the hourly rate? Or
it was all included in the salaries last year.
Yeah.
Right, well, look, can we look at that and give us an answer on that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
That is one thing. When we can go to salaries on this and everything, that is just the salary, too. Because when we're adding somebody, we for whatever reason, that's not the total, it's not the total cost.
Correct. Sure.
So we have IMRF, we have health insurance, we have Social Security. That is something people need to remember. Now, with a painter, that's paid under a real separate line item. And so it sticks out. But in all of these, it's probably at least 30%.
And listen, I'm saying if we can afford it, I saw the work the guy was doing. I'm not knocking the guy. I think he's doing good work. I'm just saying.
Well, he does something that he's allowed to do that no one else is, too. I mean,
painting is not part of Ashmead's scope.
Right.
And then we were able to negotiate a 80% wage by hiring somebody full-time.
All I'm asking is the money that's being spent in line with what we approved?
And the porters, I think we try to have the fully absorbed costs are darn close. I know it has not been totally negotiated with AFSCME, but we did put the full number in there.
I don't think
No, I'm not talking about the porters. Yeah, yeah. I'm talking about the painter.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying.
Listen, I'm not all that opposed to the porter.
I'd like to, I remember having
tomorrow or...
I can lay him off tomorrow. Yeah. That's fine.
No.
I don't know what to tell you.
I don't think that's what anybody said. I
was told to hire a painter and an employee and a half. You can't hire a half a painter. I mean, we didn't hire him until February.
Just clarify if what was discussed in the meeting was part-time or full-time. That's what they're asking.
Let's definitely clarify that because certainly...
They're asking.
I hired a full one, and if I go to a part-time painter, I guess that's what we'll do.
But I guess the real question is, if we authorize the payment for a half a year for painting, and we're now getting a full year, where did that money come from?
If you recall, you guys cut the same position two times, and you guys, Mrs. Ciampoli and yourself both didn't realize that the money was being cut from the same line item, and both apologized to me for not...
Right.
Looking at that last year, and
let's get a report for the committee for the next meeting on the painter,
Rob,
and
I'm not trying to say you did anything wrong.
Let's make sure everybody knows what we've gotten. I mean, there's certainly a lot of painting to be done.
I was just surprised it was a full time because I just remember.
I do have a question, and I'm having a hard time finding the line item.
Captain Decker, you can start painting.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
So on the auditor,
no, you can't.
It was under the auditor. But it was IMRF. It was about a $700,000 reduction from last year. So tell me about that.
Well, I as far as IMRF, I do know that our and I just you know
$77,000 less for IMRF.
I thought it was $700. I'm looking. That's what I was looking.
Maybe
at
it is.
I had actually circled it and I lost it in my mouth.
John, you got that up there? One thing I do know is our IMRF contributions, I think, gone down from like 11. This is for AFSCME. We've gone down from 11.2% to like 8.9%. That is a big savings.
For the regular and then the SLEP rate decrease.
Yeah.
Rate.
You know, we've pumped some money into IMRF ECHO and all that and SLEP.
$3.5 million.
But we've gotten much better rates, and that's a savings.
We're mixing apples and oranges.
Sure.
It has nothing to do with the $3 million we put in there, did it?
I think maybe part of it.
Well, I mean, it adds to the funded ratio of the plan, which that has a five-year.
Okay. But, I mean, you know, if $100, 10% of 100 is $10. And so we know what the payroll is, and so we should be able to have, you know, a predictable IMRF contribution, right? For Social Security or IMRF, within a reason.
It's gone down.
But 700,000 was a big number. Maybe it is 70,000.
Listen, it's gone from 11, or per person, 11.2% to like 8.9%. So, you know, all I can tell you is that's a win, 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 win.
No, it is. Yeah.
Big win.
That's huge. Is that because IMRF has better returns on their portfolio?
That's what I'm trying to say.
I'm sure it's a combination of a lot of things.
Funded ratio. Yeah. It's increasing the IMRF returns, and they do that on a 5-year smoothing basis, so it affects the.
I think they made 15% last year too. The fund.
Okay.
So there's a lot of factors I think into that. I think in the day, it's a big savings to us.
I had one more question related to the IT budget. In the 2018 budget, there were 15 positions in IT. One of those is now left, and it's in the 911 budget. And I believe one's left, and it's now in Joe Dotterman's budget. So we can expect to see that there's only 13 positions in IT.
No, the GIS budget, I guess, technically it was under the county administrator, me.
Yep.
They're down there. I don't think that's in apples or oranges. I can get you an FTE count.
What
do you have, John?
Those were included in his budget at that point. So his budget, we should see a reduction in his budget by those salaries because they're no longer in his budget.
No, the GIS person was not in the IT budget. He was in the GIS budget.
Are you talking about the 911 guy?
No, the 911 person was being paid out of 911.
Yeah. Is that it? Mr. Parkinson, if you're talking about Mr. Haney, he was he's paid for by IT or by 911. He was working out of the IT office.
Yeah, that's right.
But I believe somewhere or another, somehow or another, in the 911 budget last year, there was a position added that 911 didn't ask for and weren't told about until Mr. Dorman brought it up at the last 911 meeting. But he also apparently had an extra person in his budget that he never hired last year.
No.
Is that the junior public safety?
Yes.
So that's still in his budget, even though he doesn't need it, because the 911's paying for the person that was doing that job. Am I on the same?
No. Apparently, there was a gentleman that left, and that position was never filled. That was the assistant to Mr. Haney, correct?
Yes. The junior public safety IT person was, that position was held by Eric Ryan, who, when openings created a promotion for him probably back in June of 17. He went and took the promotion as, a network administrator spot, and that junior IT person spot has been in the IT budget and not filled since his promotion. The issue that the IT department and the 911 office have is that position was funded out of the IT admin budget and never filled, and at the same time that position appeared to be added to the 911 budget from last year without their knowledge.
So I know that with all the cuts we're looking for, and we're looking for every dime that we have, the way I see this in the 2018 projections, that's a $51,531 cut from a budget that is right there waiting, if somebody wants to look at that.
Well, if I could at least ask one more question along the same lines there for Bob and Eric up there. Did the money transfer with that position when it came from IT?
No, it was budgeted in both positions. Both budgets had that same one position included in each budget.
And
so the budget is, pardon me?
And neither filled it?
911 didn't ask for it and didn't realize that the money was in their budget for that. And the IT staff, we've been asking them to fill it, and they did not fill it.
So there's two $51,000 positions that didn't get filled? I guess that's my question.
Yes, for one full-time position.
So there's $102,000 right there.
Well, the 911 money is for 911. It can't pay for anybody to paint. I wish it could, though.
It's sitting there in his budget, never been filled, and it's not being cut.
Well, you got a good point. If the billet transferred to a different budget, the money should either follow or be removed and used.
Yeah, I'll make sure IT is here for the next meeting. How's that sound?
Well, I don't know that he has to be here.
Okay.
I don't know what we need it for.
But he may, like other people that get cuts, I'm sure they want to explain it. I mean, I'm just being honest. You know, they usually do.
We need.
Was he invited today?
No. People that were in the zone, we just.
Fair enough.
Unless you want to be here longer.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Is it okay to. Is it okay to talk about the detention home at this time?
Yes, sir. Detention home. Can we make it. Wait.
I want to address the painter. On our salaries, we're still coming in $22,845.
Listen,
under
if
projected.
You have money for a full-time painter, I'm okay with that.
We're coming in under, so we
see the work.
We haven't done any overtime. We try to keep it limited.
You may have misunderstood. I wasn't angry with the work. I'm just saying that I want to make sure that we have money to pay.
Let's just give an update next meeting on the painter.
We're coming in under budget.
I had no agenda there, Rob. I just want to make sure that we have it covered.
Yes.
Madam Chairman, I have some questions or concerns about the detention home. I noticed that we had earmarked $187,625 for the detention home. We're at $8,379.54 in process. And my understanding at the last Judiciary Committee meeting was that on this fiscal year, there would be bids let on the boiler replacement and air handler replacement. And actually, as a courtesy, I called Mr. McMadison in facilities. He says he had absolutely no problems with that if we made the decision to keep that building, and it appears that we have. At least it was unanimous in the Judiciary Committee that we keep that building rather than sell it, because it would be much more cost-effective to keep it, even if we had to spend $900,000 to fix it, than it would be to tear it down or to sell the property and then go build someplace else and go through that whole thing. So I was kind of expecting that in this fiscal year, since we had earmarked the money, that we would go ahead and complete those projects on this money. And then I was looking forward to perhaps having an equal sum of money in the budget in the next fiscal year, not rolling it over, but having an equal sum of money or comparative amount of money in next year's budget to take on the next echelons of repairs, which, if I understand in my conversation with Rob today, involves safety issues. And we had a saying in the military, safety first. And everybody, no matter what your MOS was or what you did, safety, your job was safety. And so I'm concerned about that. From this budget in front of me, I can't tell if the administration is actually putting money in next year's budget to go on with more repairs in the detention center.
You know, as Phil, I share your desire to get the detention home going, but as far as the capital projects list, this comes from Rob and the Facilities Committee, and maybe, Rob, you can speak to.
Well, we did have $187,000 earmarked to be spent this year. Whenever I put this sheet together outlining what we can get completed this year, it was I was asked to do so in a matter that shows the money that is currently being spent or in the process of being spent. If we started that project right now, it would not be completed by the December. I mean, there's just no way. Right now, we're currently working on putting a proposal together to send it out to get the bids for the air handlers and the boilers. And all these repairs are desperately needed. This is just a fraction of what should be spent out there. So whenever I was asked what we were spending this year, I listed the plaster repairs as being completed and the drainage repairs as being completed. And those were both things that we got creative on and figured out a way to get done without spending any additional cost. And so
I get that.
In doing so, we rolled it over, and if facilities and finance would like to put $187,625 times two, I can spend it, because there's $900,000 worth of repairs that should be done.
You're going to be project poor. I mean, you're going to be
I'm already
poor.
Project poor.
You're going to be switch that around. You're going to be cash poor and still have all these projects unless we keep adding people, we keep increasing salaries, we keep doing that. I hate to tell you that, you know, I love to do these projects, and Phil, I would love to continue to make all the buildings great, but when you hire people and you have the jail project and we cannot continue this course, you're going to be out of money in 2 years.
I think Mr. Thompson said just in salary increases alone, it's $700,000, right?
800.
That's year on year.
800.
Okay, The numbers are running together. Okay, 800,000. Right. Just in salary increases. And so we're down on the circuit clerk collections, million. Right? Right.
But there's some ups, you know. So, but you're right. We're down on fees.
You're down. You'll never get that back.
You're close to being balanced now without considering transferring money to capital projects to pay for the jail.
Yeah, and pumping the brakes a little bit, you know, we have the detention home property and we also have Plum Street. And as you know, Plum Street just got relet on the second RFP. The good news is it's been rezoned, right, for the second RFP. You know, we're super hopeful that we get some good responses and can move that forward. I wish it was much sooner, than now. And I think we have had those discussions with Edwardsville about that. But certainly, it'd be nice to have that moving forward before we moved on to other projects.
Like the subject, while we're on the subject, excuse me for a
pardon
second,
me, sir.
Bill, if you don't mind.
No, sir.
While we're on the subject, I think that everybody needs to think and listen to what Phil's talking about here. This project needs to be done. I understand the budget constraints that Lisa's talking about. However, if there's any proposals to this board about selling any assets from this county that we own right now, they need to be earmarked. This facility is poor. It's bad. It needs work. All right?
No doubt.
Hear me out. If you haven't been over there, see it. And any if anybody proposes that we sell any of our assets and properties or anything else, all right, like we're doing with Plum Street, we earmarked that for the jail project, correct? Any other things that come to us that we agree to sell, we need to make sure that money is going to these types of projects.
Let's go count projects.
Sorry.
With regard to the detention center, is what I'm intrigued about is it's got a capacity of, 55? And the average census is, 25.
One of the things that we did was
let me finish, though. I just want to know what it's staffed for. Is it staffed for 55 or is it staffed for 25?
It's staffed for 30.
It's staffed for 30.
It's actually right now at 28, and they have to hire people. But this is because I researched this in depth. It's an equation that comes to us from the Supreme Court.
For 30 residents?
Yeah, Tom, originally we had talked about that stuff, and it's actually been looked into, and the staffing is fairly accurate.
Okay.
Yeah, the numbers support the staffing that's there.
Let's just say this. I mean, it's $1 million to get in there, and certainly we want to get in there and get some work done. But
we're deleting some of the cells by moving the air.
But also, let's also all the stuff we give Rob to do and the facilities committee, and they can only get to so much as well. I mean, there is basically a ceiling of what you can get done in a year.
The staffing issue is slightly, and I agree with Mr. McCray, we should not overstaff. But the staff, and we went into this in depth on the Judiciary Committee, and I went over and I talked with Judge Hilla, and I also talked with the staff, and I said, okay, how many people do you really, what do you need to staff for? And it's an equation that comes out of the state Supreme Court's offices as to how many people you have per inmate. And the other thing that the board has to really remember is that the mission over there is 24/7, and you have to have X amount of people per inmate.
Well, I haven't heard you here tonight. You haven't every single person that's come and said we need more. You've agreed with every single one of them. Well, every single one. And so, what are we going to? We can't raise property taxes any more than they've already been raised.
At
the maximum rate for the county. Well, I'm just making a point. We can't just keep saying, oh, yeah, we agree with you. We do agree with them, but there's only so much money.
Well,
capital projects are.
Then the board members at the time should say, hey, wait a minute. I mean, not after we vote. I mean, we haven't voted on any of it, but at the time it would be most helpful for me to hear from my colleagues, no, that's too much. I do it sometimes. I'll stand up and say no raises for so-and-so. It's not pleasant.
Something's too much until we've seen the entire picture of the budget. We haven't even heard from half the department. So, I mean, I'm keeping notes. I have it right here. But at some point, it's just going to be scratched off no, and some will be circled yes. But I can't do it until we see the full.
I think we just need to keep an open mind and look at the rest of it.
I agree, but we can't. So I agree with that. Because there's only going to be so much money at the end of the day. We're at the maximum tax rate.
There's still some cuts in there. I just showed you 50,000. You know what I mean? That we may be overlooking stuff. We need to do our homework and really look for things like that. That 50,000 that's in there that's wasteful. It could go to someplace else.
Well, see, that was like last year when I said, "Listen, no opioid thing. What are you going to spend the money on?" No one knew. We cut $500,000 out of the initial budget. I said, "Okay, why do we need GPSs?" Nobody could really tell us. We cut another $85,000 out of budget.
And just out of curiosity, are GPSs or any of the opioid stuff in this budget anywhere? Funding for either one of them?
Well, I mean, we always fund treatment.
So that's a yes, Doug?
Well, I want to be totally accurate. As far as what you're saying is, no, but we fund a lot of treatment in every budget.
I understand that. But are there any new spendings towards
any hidden stuff, Mike, from trying to hide from people? No.
And then the other thing, what I insisted would be cut was $400,000 for the Freeman School. So I don't think it's... I'm for everything being spent.
So I there's one thing that I've been that's intrigued me a little bit is I think that we have folks some revenue sources we should really be looking at. For example, if we didn't have Wood River Township Hospital, we toured that with Rob probably 6 months ago, and there are a lot of legal documents that are stored there. And so I'm guessing if they weren't stored there, they'd have to be paying for climate control storage someplace else. And perhaps that's a legitimate expense that we could be tapping that legal document storage that has a lot of money in it. And that might be a very legitimate, you know, if they weren't paying, if they didn't have it for free from us, they'd have to pay for it someplace else.
Sure. Rob, you want to look into that with Mark Vanita about tapping that? Mr. McCray's brought it up many times, and we've made headway with it.
And the other thing, too, is the there may be agencies that are housed there, perhaps 911, another agency that has a lot of money. If they weren't there, they may have to be paying rent someplace else. Because Wood River Township Hospital, that complex is a real drain. And if we're going to keep it or we're going to sell it or whatever we're going to do with it.
Employment Trains talk about raising the amount of money they give us for being there. They have talked about that.
Yeah, Employment and Training. So, I mean, so there's a lot of different I want us to look at every single agency that's housed there and say, you know, because some of them have a lot of money and the CAC does not, so that's cool. But if you do, those are legitimate revenue sources that at least we could pay the power bill every month. And it wouldn't be and those other agencies, rather than accumulating millions of dollars in the legal document storage fund, which people, I think, would like to find legitimate ways to spend it. This would be one way we could spend it.
True.
And so
I don't disagree with that. I mean, but that whole building's an albatross around our necks that we should have never gotten in the first place.
But we did. And we can't do any – I mean, we can
look we should look to get rid of it is what we should do. And we should come up with a comprehensive building policy for every property and every building so we know where to spend our money in the finance committee.
Right.
I've been saying this for – a year and a half.
Yeah, we need to do that. But I mean, I agree. In the meantime,
but we
do think that perhaps we'd be pleasantly surprised. There may be some
other.
We should look at those in the near term. That's going to be a decision that's going to be made over time.
Right.
And I agree with you, Phil.
All right.
I'll give you an amen, Phil, on that one.
Yes.
Again, back to the Wood River project. If you look at the budget, I put $250,000 under.
Okay.
Emergency repairs to maintain building until final plan is solidified.
Correct.
So I do not plan on doing any major improvements there other than keeping it up and going.
Okay.
And just have to ask because it's so large. What's the $1.7 million for project list host tipping fee fund?
Host tipping fund, and that's for asbestos? Removal.
That is things that we can do here at the county and have the host tipping fee pay for, according to my discussion with Matt Brandmeier. All these things are things that need to be done that we found a source to pay to get them done.
They use it.
We used to just take trips with that money. But.
So they're going. So we'll have a list, though, I assume, before we kind of, or is there some type of a idea where it's going to rather than just?
The third page.
Here's a full list.
Oh, you have the whole list?
Yeah, it's on your sheet, too.
If you I got too many sheets.
You got too many sheets. Any other questions?
Thank you, Rob.
Any other questions? Can I possibly get an adjournment if there's? Thank you. They are great.
I feel like I shorted.
Close
to being done. I was shorted. I wasn't even close to being done. We didn't talk.
It's approved. Okay, we'll bring you back. Can I have a motion to adjourn? Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.